Morning to everybody. I'd like to welcome you to the Thursday, June 12th council study session. I'm Scott Smith, and I'm privileged and honored to serve as mayor, and I'd like to welcome all of you here with us today. We have several items on the agenda, so we'll jump right into it, and we'll begin with agenda item number one, which is to hear a presentation and discuss, provide direction on the 2008-2009 budget. And I guess before we get going, Councilmember Richens, are you with us on phone?
Yes, I am.
Wow.
Was that loud?
Yeah, sort of.
I'll back off.
Can you?
Promise.
Thank you. The vice. Oh, here comes the vice mayor. And now introducing. Oh, wait. Vice Mayor Kyle Jones. Grand entry. Welcome, Vice Mayor. Okay, Mr. Raines and Mr. Odom, or Mr. Brady.
Mayor, thank you. We'll first hear a presentation from, I think Brian will do the presentation on the PowerPoint. We've gone back and revised the bond package, the $408 million bond package as requested by the City Council. We really have focused on the most critical projects that we believe need to be funded here in the short term, and so that's the focus there. We've reduced the amount of the projects, or reduced the size of the total bond package and the total number of projects, both in the public safety component as well as in the streets component. Again, we've tried to focus in on areas that are most important, whether it's transportation, whether it has to do with congestion and safety of the intersections and public safety, trying to identify those elements that were most critical to continue to deliver the public safety components from the city. So with that, Brian, we'll go through the PowerPoint and then open up to any questions council may have.
Thank you. And I have to correct myself. I believe I mentioned agenda item one and read agenda item two. So this is the discussion on the proposed bond package, not the budget.
Good morning, Mayor and Council. Thank you for allowing us to be here this morning. As Mr. Brady said, we've worked hard this week to put together a revised program that outlines projects for really the period from November of 2008 through November of 2010. These would be budgeted over three fiscal years, and the first part of them would be budgeted in order to ensure our ability to spend the money should voters approve that. The first part of these projects would be budgeted in the upcoming 08-09 budget year. Wanted to provide to you a comparison on page three of the original program that we had presented to you last week versus the revised program. We'll go through the numbers in more detail in the following presentation, but you can see at the bottom we have cut those numbers dramatically down from $408.8 million to $157.9 million for the two questions, public safety and streets combined. So a significant change. Staff is available to answer questions, and we'll pause after we go through the projects for you to ask specific project questions. But staff from the police department and the fire department, as well as our transportation department, are here to answer questions about all the specific projects that we've identified in this revised program. Similar to last week's presentation, we've divided the public safety projects into three areas: the joint projects, the police projects, and the fire projects. The joint projects are outlined on page five. They total $21.3 million. Again, this is a shorter list than what you had previously, but again, the same projects that are in there. These projects appeared as joint projects earlier, along with some others that have now been deleted. Did make a clarification on 215. I had gotten the question about, well, where was station 215? And that is the station at the Phoenix Mesa Gateway Airport. An old station that we had acquired from the Air Force years and years ago that needs to be demolished because of expansion and work being done out at the airport. So we've clarified that on the project listing on page five. On page six, you can see the identified projects now as outlined for public safety for the police department. They total approximately $18.4 million. Again, these four projects were included previously in different amounts that have been adjusted now based on this revised program. Interestingly enough, not by design, but really by result, the public safety fire area, as identified on page 7, also totals approximately $18.4 million. They deal with, again, the same projects that were outlined previously, except fewer in number. Things like the fire equipment, we took the first two periods on replacement and acquisition of fire equipment. There are fewer fire stations as well as fewer design activities going on. And our emergency traffic preemption system is, again, limited in scope and number. So those are the public safety, three public safety areas, and the projects are as outlined. Quickly to talk about the street programs on page, starting on page 8, we've reduced the number to 12 major programs. Dan Clevenger is here and can speak to those. Did want to note at the bottom of this page, and we talked about it a little bit last week, of our sales tax and the utilization for that to fund the advancement of the Gateway Freeway and our desire to move that up by about 3 years, so we're going to need cash in order to do that. Again, it is not a bondable expense because we do not own the freeway. We can only contribute to and pay for the advancement of that. So we will use available capital and earmark that for freeway advancement funds. On page 9, we now look at a program for the streets of about $124 million in overall program value. Of that, 20% is going to be reimbursed by Proposition 400 funds that are available in the region. Again, the voter-approved initiative that provides sales tax monies back to the cities for appropriate Proposition 400 projects. So that reduces this amount from 124 of the total project value down to our bonded requirement of $99.6 million.
And Brian, that just so everyone understands that, so that is money that taxpayers will be paying in. It's a tax that was approved by voters. They will be paying in. And whether we use that or not, that is a tax that Mesa citizens will continue to pay. So what we're trying to do here is leverage off and get that money back that Mesa residents are going to be paying in regardless of what we do.
That's correct, Mayor. And it's not only that they are going to be paying, but they have been paying.
Okay.
It's a 20-year program. I think we're probably in the second year of the Prop 400. So it's money that it's sales tax that the region, the county has already, taxpayers have been paying into, and it's our share coming back in terms of these projects.
And if we don't complete these projects, then that money does not come back to the city. Well, I know that's a absolute statement, but this is one of those things that the money is there, but we in most cases need to spend money to get money because it's a share or a matching type of a program.
That's correct, Mayor.
Okay.
So again, about 20% of the overall value of this program is available back to us in reimbursements. We had spoken previously about moving up projects in the program. There are four now in the revised program. Four of the projects are ones that are advanced. They're advanced approximately, on average, about 12 and a half years. Again, we're moving things from a heavily loaded, rear-loaded program up into the current five-year or two-year program. And so you see the four projects here that we're advancing, and the period of that we're advancing them is identified on page 10. So again, four projects are moving up on average 12.5 years.
And the thought process behind the advancement is?
And Dan can probably speak better to that than I, but one is to save money because those would be more costly to produce or to construct in the out years, 2020, 2025, things of that nature. Two, that there are issues that lead us to need those projects now, whether they're safety concerns, congestion concerns, things of that nature. And the third one is that our program, as originally identified and voted on, was a heavily rear-loaded program where many of the projects came in the latter 5 to 7 years of the projects or program, the 20-year Prop 400 program, and we would have been unable to do all of those projects by the time we got there. So it behooves us to move them forward and balance those out.
So once again, when we say it was a 20-year program, this is a Prop 400-driven 20-year program. This is not our city's, I know it fits in with it, but it's really driven by Prop 400 and the scheduling of those monies. So when we say we're advancing, we're not saying that we originally weren't going to do those. It's just that how it fit into the Prop 400 schedule they were rear-loaded in the Prop 400 schedule, and we are advancing them, once again, taking advantage of those monies and saving money by lower costs. And also, the Prop 400 match is somewhat fixed, is it not? Yes. So, in other words, the real value or the present value of those contributions diminishes, or I guess the present value can't diminish, but the value is a real dollar allotment, and the earlier we spend it, the more value it has to us because of the present value of the money. Is that an accurate statement?
Correct, Mayor. And I think that's very important from a financial perspective, to understand that we've looked at this from the perspective of trying to balance our program to bring these projects, which, first of all, are needed. I mean, we're not, I guess one of the careful impressions, we're not just doing it because it's going to save us money. I mean, that is a strong element, but it's also because these are projects, even though they may have been identified later in the project, later in the program as far as years, the need to do them exists today as far as safety and congestion. But by recognizing the need today, there's other projects that are further out into the future too, but we've chosen these because of their need based on current conditions today, whether it's peak period times of congestion, whether it's the record of accidents at those intersections, or, for example, the bottom two on page 10 are related to projects that we believe need to be done now in order to provide for access around the airport and open up areas for economic development. So in these cases, we think there is a demand, but there is because it's for future growth opportunities, and we think that in the end, the city will recover back this cost many times just because it'll make opportunities for development grow.
And I'm glad to hear that because, you know, I don't want to give the impression, it sounds like this is not a financial, gee, we can save money type of thing, because I really want to be sensitive to the fact that the times we're in and the reason why we're going through this process to begin with is it because of a sensitivity as to what we're doing. And I'm glad to hear that these are basically need-driven, that it seems like there happens to be an added benefit, not the primary benefit for reason for doing this, but an added benefit for doing this is, oh, by the way, we can also take advantage and leverage these monies and do that. And I want to make sure, I'm glad to hear that the need and the requirement and safety issues are what has driven your decision. Thanks. Vice Mayor Jones?
And as you alluded to earlier, there's projects were backloaded when they were scheduled through the regional program, Prop 400. And in order to do that match, we have to come up with a lot of money. And when it's backloaded, we will never have enough money to do all those backloaded projects. So we need to spread it out more so that we can get that match together. Otherwise, we would be missing out on a lot of money that's due to come back to our city.
Thank you, Mayor. On page 11 are really the identification of those 12, I believe it's 12 projects that we had listed. The ones that have reimbursements with them are asterisk out to the right. There are also four projects that get some reimbursement. These are shown net of those reimbursements that we will get. And again, the projects total about $99.6 million after all the reimbursements. On page 12 is a map provided to you that identifies those projects color-coded throughout the city. And at this point, Mayor, Council, I'll stop before we get into a quick summary of the debt service and tax implications to really talk about the projects. And again, the fire, police, and transportation personnel are here to talk about any of those projects that we'd identified previously up to now.
Councilmember Summers, anyone have any questions? Councilmember Summers?
Where's Dan?
Dan, you're up.
Dan, first project I want to discuss, actually there are two for you. Well, three. We could go to four, but I have to scan this a little bit more. The first one is the two projects I want to ask, why are these on the list? The first one is listed number one on page 12, and that's Power Road from, looks like, was that Rittenhouse? To Pecos Road up to the Loop 202. And the second one is project number three, which is from the Loop 202 to Ray Road, and that's supposed to be a little two-lane street. The reason I'm asking is that since we're asking Mesa voters to approve bonds for these particular streets, it would appear to me, given their location, that these aren't entirely high-use roads by our taxpayers. So why these particular projects right now, as opposed to, say, Guadalupe Road or some of the other intersection improvements in the city?
Sure. I can address those first two. Mayor, Councilmember Summers, the project on Power Road, if that was your first question, was Power Road, I believe. That's a joint project between Maricopa County, MCDOT, if you will, Mesa, and Gilbert. The city of Mesa will be paying only 25% of those costs. So we have an IGA to build this project. Originally, Power Road was designed to have three phases, basically.
Excuse
going.
Me. I know we like acronyms, but we have a lot of people out there don't
can
know
I do that.
IGA means an intergovernmental
agreement.
Trying
to be conscious of that.
Okay.
Intergovernmental agreement. So we have an agreement.
That's an agreement between the three of us.
Between the agencies,
okay.
Right.
Thank you.
And it specified how much each agency would pay towards this project. So originally, there was going to be three phases to Power Road. It's going to go from baseline, basically, to Guadalupe, and Guadalupe to Galveston, et cetera. Because priorities have changed, and we've been working with MCDOT, which is Maricopa County, and Gilbert, to rephase these projects, there's now five phases, and the most important one to the agencies was this one. And again, we'll be paying only 25% of the total costs. After such time, we would take that over and maintain that street. It would be a City of Mesa street.
Dan, Councilmember, if I can step in, let me tell you why we think this project's important to the citizens of Mesa. I mean, obviously, it's important to the county, it's important to Gilbert. But if you look at the southeast part of Mesa and with where the airport is located, and with the idea that we have identified a tremendous amount of industrial, light industrial on the southern edge of the city, one of the concerns that has been, and we've talked about using it as a logistics center, the question is, if we're going to build out that area, is how do you move traffic in and out of this area up to the freeway? And there's really only a few, with the airport kind of in the middle of all that, there's not, and we're not really wanting to encourage traffic, heavy truck traffic, to cut through the airport itself, because that's really where passenger terminals, you don't want to mix the two. So the idea is to have kind of a loop or an access around that area. And so for Power Road, Ellsworth, those become critical for us in order to generate that flow of traffic around that area. So that's from we're looking at it for the future Mesa businesses and residents down in that area, that will, while certainly there'll be residents out of Queen Creek and Gilbert, they're using it. Certainly by paying only 25%, we think 25% will benefit at least 25% from opening up those areas in the southeast part of the city.
Well, and I guess, well, then let's talk about that little piece from the Loop 202 to Ray Road in connection to Ray Road itself, because Ray Road is a great project. Wouldn't that little spur there, is there access to the freeway there? I can't remember.
Mm-hmm.
Is it Hawes?
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's Hawes. Mayor, Councilmember.
I need to look at the bigger map. Okay.
Mayor, Councilmember Summers, on Hawes Road, that's an easy one. It doesn't exist today. There's an unusable interchange there right now.
The interchange is done, isn't it?
Yes. Okay. It's going to connect the interchange to Ray Road and beyond, so it's going to be probably the most direct access to the airport.
Okay. So, but doesn't that, with the completion of Ray Road and the construction, if we were to construct Hawes Road, wouldn't that provide that access off of Ellsworth so that truck traffic can have easy access, even shift some of that traffic off of Power Road over to Ellsworth so they have access off of Hawes to the freeway? And I'm just trying to think of which project and how we might,
Mayor, Councilman,
if we do,
Summers,
if we might move.
What we're talking about is we're seeing one, I guess there's a variety of elements. A lot of business park development that we're seeing is going to happen on the southern part of the airport.
Right.
Okay. So moving around the airport, whether it's Ellsworth, but Ellsworth right now doesn't necessarily have a direct connection to the 202 unless you go up to, what is it, Elliott? Is that where the intersection is? We're trying to create a multiple opportunity, so that's where Power Road comes into play.
Right, but with Ray completed to Hawes and Hawes to the freeway, that would give access
Correct. This is the north-south concern. It's really getting north-south. That's east-west, and certainly that is, it's kind of creating a loop, if you would, around the airport access. That's really kind of the thinking here of why we want to participate in that. And then, frankly, what it also does is it really cleans up that power road on that part, our edge there where ASU, that's the entrance to the ASU campus. And with the continued growth of ASU, you can see in addition to Power Road, we're also talking about, I think refer to it as the
ASU
Ring Road. Is that, am I using the right term now? And it, again, as part of our contributions to really in continue to promote and forward the development of that campus.
Yeah, I mean, this is sort of, you don't have to spend a lot of time on this, but what is the county, this is only to Pecos Road, what is the county and Gilbert and Queen Creek, I don't know if Queen Creek goes that, I guess they do go that far north, what are they doing about the intersection there at the old Rittenhouse? Because it seems to me, I mean, even on a good day, right now traffic is literally backed up to Williamsville. Oh, boy, I got three people standing up at one time. What are the plans to get through that railroad, that intersection? Because it seems like no matter what we do down the road, unless that intersection is somehow taken care of, we're still going to have this huge problem there.
Mayor Smith, I'm Alan Sanderson with Transportation. Actually, Town of Gilbert has just recently started construction on a project to improve the Power and Pecos Road intersection. Dan mentioned earlier that Power Road was split into five phases. That intersection improvement is one.
Okay.
I think it's now phase two, but it just started construction.
So hopefully that'll alleviate a lot of the congestion that is there,
right,
with that bottleneck.
Yes, okay. It'll improve the intersection and eliminate
so
that.
So it'll feed in
bottleneck
nicely with what we're doing and not create even a worse bottleneck where we have now six lanes going into literally two lanes.
That's okay. Correct.
Councilmember Higgins?
Question, the $18 million, is that actually 25% of the entire project, or 18.9 of the Power Road?
Well, before reimbursement.
That's before reimbursement.
Right. Yeah, that's the full cost of that project. And then the net cost, if you'll see on page 11, represents what the reimbursements and cost sharing are.
So, all right. So we're reimbursed for $10 million. That's still not 25% of $18 million. That's like 50%, right?
And you want to speak to the reimbursement arrangement then, since that one's significantly higher on the Power Road number. Okay, we'll have to get back to you on why.
Okay.
I mean, some of those we've talked previously about them being a 30-70 split. Some of them are different depending on the projects and who our partners are with and things of that nature. And this is one of those that has a differential. Again, if it's an $18.9 million project, our reimbursements are scheduled to be $10 million on this one, so our net cost of $8.9 million.
And that's a combination of, are there Prop 400 reimbursements including, with your, and that also includes Gilbert and Maricopa County's portions?
Well, that would be our reimbursement back to us.
Right. Coming from both Prop 400 and the other agencies?
But it would be it would be all Prop 400 money, even from the other agencies, my belief.
Correct.
Follow up. So the whole entire project's four times the $19
million. And that's what doesn't reflect in our numbers, and we'll get back with you.
And then just a question, when I was looking through this entire packet, the first year O&M on that section is $81,000. But when you look at similar stretches in our package, we have like $4,000 O&Ms for a couple mile stretch. So I don't understand why it's so different.
In one of those, I think it's just because of the size of the facility. One, the width, and two, the length. It's the biggest facility that we're putting in terms of this program, in terms of the length of it, in the intersection operations and things of that nature.
In that section, we're responsible for an O&M. The Gilbert line is on, or the line is on the Gilbert side of things, not on Mesa, or it's a joint.
Mayor,
on these ones, either we or Gilbert takes care of that, correct?
Right. Eventually, Mayor Smith, when these projects are done, the City of Mesa will maintain Power Road from Baseline Road down to Williamsfield.
Okay. Down to Williamsfield. When we're done.
That's correct.
And then from Williamsfield to Pecos?
Either Gilbert or the county gets kind of confused.
I can address that, Mayor Smith. We have an intergovernmental agreement with Gilbert.
Which is an IGA, by the way.
That's right. See, I learned from this morning.
Good.
that outlines the plan of who is going to take what section. Right now, Power Road belongs to Maricopa County, and our agreement is that Mesa will take Power Road down through Williamsfield intersection from the south side of Williamsfield intersection on south. Gilbert will annex upon completion.
Which just somewhat confuses me, getting back to Councilmember Higgins. If that's the case, if either Maricopa County or Gilbert, then what's the $81,000? Our reimbursement to them, or our, if they have the responsibility? No.
Well, we still have Williamsfield North.
Williamsfield North, I got you. Okay. All right.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, because this goes clear down to the freeway. I'm sorry.
Right.
I got you.
Just one follow-up. But that's like, what, 2.5 miles-ish from Williamsfield to the Santan? I'm guessing, by looking at the map, maybe 3.
Mayor, Councilmember Higgins, if we're talking about first-year O&M, there's not a lot of maintenance done on brand-new pavement. I think that's probably the issue.
Well, no, the issue is that it's like 4 times more money than any other project that's of similar length. Like the baseline to southern streets like Greenfield and
Mesa Drive.
Okay, I'm
sorry, you're talking about the overall cost, not the maintenance at this time.
I'm talking about the first-year O&M.
I think this is what we're looking at as an incremental cost. Most of the other areas already exist, so we've already got O&M built into this. This is a totally new section, much wider than it already was, and the length of it and so forth and the agreements. This is why this one's more significant in cost. Doesn't necessarily mean in that first year we're going to have that full 81, but we're representing what our normal ongoing cost will be related to that stretch of road.
And Mayor and Council, I think this is where one of the ways we do budgeting, anytime, one of the things we try to do when we're doing budget, anytime we add a new capital project or any capital project, at the beginning, while we may have the capital dollars, one of the things we're very sensitive at, in this city is to make sure we can maintain that asset through its useful life. And maybe it's a little aggressive to assume some maintenance costs up front, but it helps us create a schedule. And so a lot of that may be based upon the size of the asset, in this case pavement, it may be the intersection, and we use certain formulas. So while we budget that number at the beginning, that doesn't necessarily say there's going to be an actual expenditure, but it's a way for us to begin accounting for that. So we look out in the long term to make sure as we're bringing on these new streets that in the long term we will have the resources to maintain them. We may never spend this money actually on those streets in those first years, but at least we're building it into the budget. So 5, 10, 15 years out, we'll know that we've allocated dollars throughout the budget to do that.
And I appreciate Councilmember Higgins' questions. We got a long list, so I don't want you to think we'll be here all morning if we go over every little thing, but I appreciate her because it gives us a basis, and thank you, Mr. Brady, for the explanation as to how these O&M numbers throw in here. So thank you. Councilmember Summers, you had a comment?
Yeah, and it ties back into what I was referring to before, how we selected these projects. But see, the Ring Road is, we won't be receiving any ASU Ring Road, is that what it is?
Yeah.
Okay. There's no reimbursement for that. So we would like to accelerate that project. Broadway Road is another one that's coming off as we complete the Loop 202. The issue with Broadway Road is that it was a county design. Inverted crown, maybe you've explained that, and we're having some issues with Fountain of the Sun lies directly south. They're 1 square mile, and that's their main entrance into there. So they have some traffic issues during when it rains occasionally here in Arizona.
Correct. Mayor Smith, Councilmember Summers, Broadway Road was, you said exactly correct, was a county road. The inverted crown allows it to carry water down the street, which is not a great idea for pavement. It damages the pavement, and that's what's happened there. In addition to that, it's a safety problem when we get rains, particularly in the monsoon season. It gets quite deep, and there's a lot of concerns from residents out there. We've given it some treatments last year to try to, you know, kind of glue it back together until such time that we have funding to build that properly and have the regular crown put on so that it drains into the gutter, into the storm system. But at this time, that's not one of the projects in the 2 year. I believe in our 5 year package, that was probably in the third year, if I recall.
Yeah, I guess just to make a comment, since the 202 will be completed and we'll see, that's a full, we'll have off ramps on and on ramps. We could see increased traffic along Broadway. I'd like to consider bumping that up into the first 2 years as we consider how we go forward. So,
thank you.
Thank
you, Councilmember Kavanaugh.
Thank you, Mayor. I have a question on the public safety projects. Not to diminish the street projects, I support them. But I am glad to see that the Dobson substation remains in this package. I've had some questions in the last week since our last study session about the issue of the location of the station. And I'm just wondering, in response to those questions, what is the possibility or probability in the next 5 months before the election that we would be closer to identifying an appropriate location for that substation?
Mayor, Councilman Kavanaugh, you know, we have been looking for a location, you know, for the last couple of months. There may be some sites out there that we'll identify early on. The challenge for us, though, is without an identified source of funding is how do we make a commitment to a project like that. But ultimately, at the end of the day, I think what is going to prevail is we want to find a station, a location that really best serves that community, and mostly in your district, obviously, because we just think that there, the substations can play a very critical role, not just as a place for the officers to go and for their roll calls, their meetings, and for a desk, but really we're looking at trying to incorporate that to make it part of the community also, so it becomes a place where the community can come, get reports, they can be part of the process where the police officers meet on a regular basis to talk about what's happening in that particular part of town as far as public safety issues. So we're very interested in making sure we choose the right location that serves the public, that the public feels like they can have access to, and serves our public safety employees' purposes too. So while we're currently evaluating sites right now, there's no doubt about that, and we if we have to make a decision sooner than the bonds, you know, and we find something, do we just really, really think it's going to work? Obviously, that is something we have to consider if it can prevail. But right now, without knowing, we just don't have, I can't tell you where those funds are right now. But at the end of the day, we want to do the right, we want to find the right location that serves this area best.
Yeah, Council Americans, and then we'll get back to.
On that same station, I wonder if you could give some history of, in the report it says because of the decentralization that took place, it requires more space.
Higgins, yes. Why don't we do this? Let's go through and finish if it's okay with you, because just so, although I know the chief needs his exercise, just so we don't have people coming back. I mean, why don't we, if it's okay with you, why don't we have finish off the bonding, and then let's go back and take all the things at a package as a package, if that's okay with everybody.
Sure.
And we can then go down the list and talk about them. Is that okay?
Would you like to finish the presentation?
Yeah,
that
let's
you
finish
asking?
The presentation and talk about the taxes, and then we can come back and then we can go project by project and answer any questions we have there.
That sounds good to me. I've had my hand up for half an hour.
Oh, you're still there, Councilman? Thank you. Councilmember Richin's presence is duly noted.
Okay. Mayor, then we'll pick back up at page 14 of your presentation, and just for this purpose, put together here how the bonds would be sold over the 2 years for each public safety and streets, and what the totals would be. Again, they total between the two questions $157.9 million. On 15, we talked last week about what our the general obligation bond debt schedule would be for these bonds if they were to be sold. So what I've done is put on this graph for you the schedule that we talked about under the $408.8 million, which is what I call the original line on the top, as well as the revised number. So you can see that our GO bond debt that relates to this project or this program is significantly lower on an annual basis. Just put it in a graphical form, didn't do the tables like we did last week and things of that nature, but I did do the summaries on page 16 of what that GO debt just for the 100 and got to remember this new number, $157.9 million relates to. And on an average, I'm sorry, let me back up. The last year with a 5-year program was a 24-year average. This is now down to 21 since it's a shorter term program. The averages would be a 13 cent average tax rate, with a low of 7 cents in 9-10 as we ramp up, and 21 cents in 10-11, then it would decline from there. By comparison, that 13 cent tax rate, by comparison to the $408.8 million program, that number was 28 cents. So it's gone from 28 down to 13. Just to give you that perspective. On page 17 is a graph, and it's starting to get a little bit busy, but what I did again was to show our current GO bond debt, which is the yellow line at the bottom, the revised program that combines our current GO bond debt as well as the new revised program that we're presenting this morning. That's the middle black diamond line. For perspective purpose, put in the previous $408.8 million GO bond debt program to kind of give you a perspective and where that shift has been made. So you can see that on page 17. As we discussed last week, also there would be a necessity to find some funding, especially for our public safety expenditures in terms of their operations and maintenance expenses. Councilmember Higgins asked the question about street O&M. Our street O&M is covered by our sales tax, the 0.3% sales tax that is really dedicated predominantly to street maintenance. So those street O&M costs are taken care of in the sales tax, and we forecast those. But the O&M requirements related to this bond election for public safety still exist because we're adding some new fire stations and adding some operations. And the impact of those are outlined on page 19. Again, we put in the impact of the O&M requirements for the previous program as well as the new program, and you can see they're significantly lower. Again, thinking back to last week, we talked about the what that debt offset would need to be in terms of a rate. That's outlined on page 20. Again, lowered considerably. Our average rate would be just under 3 cents. That compares to a number that was just under 8 cents in terms of that offset requirement if council were to utilize those resources in terms to fund that public safety operations. So we've put those on page 20 for you. What that looks like graphically is on 21, and that 3 cents is really the yellow bar at the bottom of the screen here, and that is a average tax rate of about 3 cents. Again, to pay, what we would do is levy a property tax on existing GO bond debt that would we then free up general fund money to fund the staffing for the identified fire stations and activities that we've included in the public safety program.
And I want to make something clear, because after the presentation last week, most of the questions I got were on this very issue. This is a separate yet related issue, because the bonds we're talking about are, do we issue the bonds to construct certain things? The next question is, we've talked about paying off those bonds with a secondary property tax. What we're talking about is the incremental operating maintenance costs that are created by the construction of a fire station. You got to put firefighters in there, for example. Staffs is introducing a proposal that we incur or that we include in our secondary property tax a portion to pay off existing debt. That's a decision that we are not making today. That's a separate decision that this council will have to weigh, because we have two choices. We can either reallocate existing funds, however we have, or maybe we'll win the lottery and we'll somehow get a boom where we find new funds through an increase in sales tax revenues or whatever. Or if we continue on like we are now, we can also decide to impose an additional tax, additional secondary property tax on existing bond debt, not new, that would then either cover all or part of that. But that's a decision that we'll have to make well down the road when we decide, when these things actually open and we have to fund them and we have to do that. I just want to be clear on that this is not really a package deal that we're agreeing to, but I appreciate you throwing it out there that it is something that you're recommending. Am I correct on that, or am I?
You're correct, Mayor Smith, and we just wanted to give you the perspective of what the amount that would be relative not only to overall GO secondary property tax rates, but in comparison to the last time we were here.
I got you. No, and I appreciate that.
And maybe to further clarify it, that would be the decision point when you come back to authorize specific projects going forward.
That's correct. All right. Thank you.
So then moving on to page 22, when we combine the the new program, the debt service required to the new program, plus potentially this public safety offset, the about 3 cents for that, you get an average tax rate for the 21-year program of approximately 16.25 cents, or $0.1625. Compared to the last $408.8 million program, that number was 36 cents. So we've dropped it from 36 down to 16. So it's a considerably lower rate. Wanted to show you that visually. Those are the two areas, so that average rate is what's outlined in the blue band as well as the very small yellow band at the bottom of your graph. When you combine those two into a total average, or the total average tax rate and the 16.25 cents, here's what the impacts are on the average residents, $100,000 assessed value residents, $250,000, and $2.5 million commercial. Let me give you some perspective. Again, $100,000 residents, $16.25 annually. That was $36.24. A quarter of $1 million residents, $40.62, was previously $90, or a little over $90. And the commercial industrial listed at the bottom was previously about $1,800. So again, those have, not only has the program changed dramatically from $408.8 million down considerably, those resulting tax rates and things that would go with that if taxes were levied to pay for that have dropped dramatically also. On 25, the other issue that was brought up by council last week was the question format. And what I did at the bottom of this question format, you saw it previously, we added the clause that was spoken to by the city attorney, Ms. Spinner, on related to the issue at the very bottom of the sheet there, the clause, if you wanted to adjust the bond question format, it's as it exists in the lowercase. The concern is do we add the clause at the very bottom? So with that, Mayor, that's Chuck and I's portion. I'm more than happy to answer any questions.
Ms. Spinner.
Thank you, Mayor. Just to give you some foundation upon which to make a decision whether you want to add that language or not, the statute provides either option, either with or without that additional language that's bolded on slide 25. The statute says it's based on your intention. So if you intend today, as we call this election, to pay for it with secondary property tax, you should not include that language. If you intend that you may look for other options other than the property tax, you should include it. There's no case law that has come out interpreting what does it mean intend. Does it legally bind you one way or another? We don't believe it does. So we believe that even if, whether you include that language or you don't, if, you know, 3, 4, 5 years from now, you do not include this language, but you want to start using operating expenses to pay for some of these bonds, you can legally do that, we believe. So you should make your decision based on what you intend today. Will we be using secondary property tax to pay off all of these bonds? If the intent is yes, then you should not include that language. If you're going to look for operating expenses, then perhaps you want to use that language.
Thank you. Okay, let's go back then. Thank you, by the way. Let's go back and, I guess, Chief Gascon, let's start with the police projects, and Councilmember Cavanaugh and Councilmember Higgins. I guess the first one on the line was Dobson Ranch. Well, I think we've already posed the question. I don't know if you got all the answers you needed on that specific item. So,
you still remember the question? Or
yes,
you want
I
me
did.
To...
I believe the question had to do with the decentralization. Yes, the reason for the decentralization was when the police department, years ago the city was a much smaller city, and most services were downtown centric. When I first arrived here about 18 months ago, one of the things that I noticed is that we now had 4 district stations, very far apart. All of our detective services were downtown. And when we started to conduct CompStat, one of the things that we noticed very quickly is that sometimes it was taking weeks before serious crimes that had occurred at a district were moved over to the detective side, and there was an investigative process taking place. The reality is best practice in policing today in most major cities, you want to get as many of the resources that you can as close to the community that you're serving, because what you want to do is you want to develop ownership by the entire policing team, patrol, detective, and other operations. By having detectives located, co-located with patrol, you're doing several things. Number one, you're having the interaction between the patrol personnel and detective personnel on a daily basis. That's very important because most of the crimes are generally solved through a partnership. You have patrol out there 24/7, you have detectives that are doing the background work, and you want that communication to go back and forth all the time. Secondly, what occurs by decentralizing services is that you begin to develop a sense of ownership. If your detectives are downtown centric, they're looking at the entire city, they're not going to have the level of ownership at the neighborhood level that you want to have. The problem was our stations were not designed to have detectives in the stations. And the older ones, and Dobson being one of those, it really accentuated the movement of detectives to the station. It was a calculated risk that I took. It was weighing public safety against comfort for the police personnel, and I decided to go with public safety, and that's what we moved detectives into the stations. But we recognized that that was an untenable situation, that eventually we would have to start creating police stations that are different. Also, the city is continuing to grow, so the reality is that we're going to have to put more people into the stations in the future. And then finally, a problem that I really have with the way our stations are developed today, our stations are not really user-friendly to the public. In fact, Mayor and I have had a discussion about the way Red Mountain is located, where really the public cannot have true access to the station. And secondly, our stations are not open 24/7. When I first came to the city, in fact, some of the staff laughed because I walked into some of our stations at 1 o'clock in the morning, and I really had this very uncomfortable feeling that was in sort of a forgotten city. I have never been to a police station where there is no one at 1 o'clock in the morning. Well, that's our station. You know, everybody's out on the street. There is no, you don't have a watch commander. You don't have a desk that is open to the public. And we're way too large of a city to have that setting. If you have at 1 o'clock in the morning today to go to a front desk of a police station, you have to come downtown. Now, if you happen to live in Southeast Mesa, that is a long way away, or even Dobson for that matter. So one of the goals now, as we start developing new stations, is that we'll be open around the clock. There will be staff there around the clock. You will be able to walk to your station and be able to talk to police personnel and get your problems handled. So we are looking to create a different reality when it comes to police stations, and I believe that it's more consistent with best practice in policing, not today, but quite frankly, 30 or 40 years ago.
Chief, one of the comments that we've had is, you know, Dobson Ranch is built out. We talk about a growing city, and I can understand things in the east part, but, you know, Dobson Ranch is built out. So, gee, why can't we just survive with what we've got? How does that improve public safety? I guess the assumption is that if a part of the city is developed, it's somewhat static and not right. a changing thing. So, could you address that?
Why this
new station? Yeah.
Absolutely. If you look at where the current station is located, we're sort of landlocked around water. The station is very small. It is inadequate to handle the current needs. Even if there was not an ounce of growth in that particular part of the city, we are still in a place that is completely inadequate. We hope that there will be future economic development in the area and that we will start revitalizing that area and actually have an increased commerce in the area. Also, there is additional residential planning to go into that area. We have multi-housing that is being planned for that area. So even though it is unlikely that there will be major residential growth in the region, we have two things to contend with. Number one, the current space is inadequate for just what we have there today. Secondly, I think that there will still be increased police business as you have increased commercial growth and some other developments that are being planned for that area.
I'm going to, and maybe this isn't fair, do you believe that public safety, if we continue the way it is at risk and is in danger of growing risk? I guess I'm trying to get to the meat of it, that is this a thing that's nice, or do you really believe that if we continue on with the existing situation, because you've said it's inadequate, that there will be a growing challenge to provide adequate public safety in the area? And maybe that's a no-brain question, but...
It's a fair question, and there's very little that is fair about policing. So I think that we are at risk. You know, we're looking currently our police personnel ratio, police officer ratio to resident is one of the lowest for a city of our size. We're around 1.9. Quite frankly, possibly somewhat less if we really look at what probably our true population looks like. If you look at our demographics, a city of this size, we really should be looking at least somewhere around 2.1 officers per 1,000 residents. That is going to continue to be more of a problem for us as we continue to grow in some parts of the city, as we continue to become more of a commercial center. I think also the fact that we are so under police is showing in many things that we do. We're having to be extremely efficient in some areas where maybe efficiency, it starts to borderline into a question as to whether you're impacting public safety over the long haul. I can tell you that, for instance, we have areas like our crime lab that we definitely have to put more people in there. We need to be able to have all of our DNA work, all of our biological work should be up to date all the time. It is not a luxury to say that we're going to wait 6 months or a year to do DNA work on a rape because we don't have a known suspect. I don't view that as a luxury. I think that there are parts of our city, our commercial centers, where we are providing very little patrolling. I don't view that as a luxury. You know, these are things that we start paying the price for. We have done very well by altering our systems. We have become increasingly more efficient. As you well know, we have reduced our overtime usage by nearly 4,000 hours a month, which I think is very, very significant. We're exploring a new configuration of our personnel. We have, Mr. Brady and I have discussed the possibility of implementing a pilot program where we're going to bring a civilian classification that will take most of the report type of calls where there is no suspect involved in order to lower our operational cost. We're exploring many other efficiency initiatives, but at the end of the day, we're still going to have to face to the fact that we're under police and we're going to have to start planning for the future. And frankly, one of the things that I find very disturbing, I hear people talking about, if I'm in my house and I only have so much money coming in, then I have to adjust what I do. And that is true, and I agree with that. But then also when in my house, if I only have so much money, then if I only have money to buy hamburger, I do not expect to have steak for dinner. And the problem that we have is many of the very same people that talk about the fact that we need to learn to live with our means. There are very same people that call the police on a very minor incident, and they expect a 5 or 7 minute response to something that generally we cannot afford to provide that level of response. So I think you have to have it one way or the other.
Thank you. That's good for that. Fine. Any other questions, Councilmember Summers? Because I've got a few too. So,
are yours on the that issue or something else?
I'm just they're police and fire related. But go ahead with yours first.
I want to talk about the arraignment center. Yeah. The arraignment center didn't make the list of cuts for the reduced bond package. But looking at the information on that, the arrangement center was going to reduce the need for additional holding cells as well as transportation facilities. It was going to accommodate having more officers there. We're looking at a 287G program, for example, in order to determine whether somebody's in the country legally or not. We're still looking for those federal funding. We needed this facility, the increased capacity of this facility, in order to provide the space for those types of activities to occur. Plus, we were looking at decreased costs for transportation of folks back and forth. So, $16.4 million project that did not make it into the final project, but the timeline was for July 1/09 through June 30/10. So it was in the first 2 years of a 5-year bond project. And I'm curious, why did this not make the cut? And when you look at what the project entails, some of the renovations, CompStat, multi-purpose community rooms, second floor renovation for police personnel, maybe that portion of the project could be delayed to the second phase, but at least the main operational arraignment center could be done in the first 2 years. So I guess there's two questions there. Why wasn't it added in, and could we see some kind of a change project that we might want to consider?
Mayor and Council, maybe I should answer that question, because I think certainly the Chief supports the project still and would want to see it in place.
Sure he does.
You know, we were trying to create a balance here. I think the message we got is, and it's tough when you talk about public safety and or even some of the street projects, about what is the most critical project, projects that should be prioritized to be put in the first 2 years. And with that, also trying to get a context of really showing a reduction. And certainly arraignment court, I still think we believe that that's an important project. We think it's a good reuse of a building we already own, so, and it's adjacent to the downtown police headquarters. So there's a lot of things that make sense there. Obviously, it will be timed with the departure of the prosecutor's office and municipal courts out of that current building. Whether we could divide it up, I guess once my feeling is, I think once you kind of go in and start renovating a building, I'm not sure you gain a whole lot of efficiencies by phasing it.
We'll lose some economies of scale, yeah, but what would that number look like?
And I don't know that we've decided. We've not looked at what those numbers would be, how to break that up. That's something we could look at. I think it just came to a point of we felt like maybe this is a project that, while it's certainly important and could provide some efficiencies in operation, we also, if you recall, in this year's budget, have also introduced, and I think you'll see on your agenda for the 23rd, where we're implementing this, what are we calling it? The bracelet program? I'm not sure if I'm using electronic monitoring. Sorry.
Yes.
So we have a certain electronic monitoring program. I think that will help to a certain degree. Will it replace the arraignment court? Of course not. Really, it's just an efficiency in trying to balance a budget and come up with savings. There's no really other good, it's an important project. I think, though, when you compare it to the other projects that we've identified in here, it may not reach this. These others we felt like had a higher priority from a public safety perspective. Maybe the Chief could weigh in if he feels differently than that. But at this point, just trying to balance out a reduced budget and priorities of public safety that we felt like were most critical that needed to be addressed in the short term. These were those projects. The timing, you know, we still have a year or so, I think, before the municipal courts will be moving out of that current building. So there is some timing issues about whether or not, you know, how soon could we really move forward with that project. So.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to add. The other part is that the municipal court is still going to be there for at least a year and a half or so. So the reality is that if we're looking at a two-year bond, bonding this today may not, the money wouldn't be used for at least 2 or 3 years. So that was another reason why we really didn't push that project, because we wouldn't be able to do it tomorrow.
So the original project timeline was a little overly optimistic?
What was the time? I'm sorry, you have that.
July 09 to June 10.
The timing was pretty well coincided with the vacancy, so we would have started. Pre-planning would have
been.
You're
right. I mean, we're assuming it being pushed out a little further than that timeline.
Okay, that's it on that one.
Chief, if you could just give us some, and I guess Chief Beck, or whoever you want to come up, because I'd like to ask some questions or a clarification on the communication system, also the Station 215, which is a joint use, and. Chief Gascon, if you could just explain real briefly the police aviation component of this.
Yes. On the police aviation piece, our fleet, we have one aircraft now that is approaching 19,000 hours of operation. We have another aircraft that is following very close to that. One of the things, again, as I came here, is that although we had three helicopters in our fleet, we're flying less than 10 hours a day, and we're not flying every day of the week. Modern policing, really, aviation is not a luxury anymore in modern policing. The reality is that we depend on air support to get too many high-priority calls that are going to get there way before a ground unit, and they can actually assess a lot of the things that are going on before the ground units get there, and quite frankly, help us make life and death decisions. Additionally, we are the rescue unit that the fire department uses when we have to do search and rescue. So in order to increase our ability to provide that service, I came up with a new scheduling system. We raise our air, time in the air to about 12 hours a day, which may not seem like a lot, but it is a lot when you go in a 24/7 operation. We moved some of that operation also to increase nighttime flying, and again, it was a management decision. But, you know, all this is putting further stress on the existing equipment, and we need to start planning to replace some of that equipment. The marketplace today for the type of aircraft that we're flying is very tight because there is tremendous demand internationally. So if you place an order for a new unit today, you're looking at possibly a year and a half before delivery. So what we're doing is we got an aircraft that already has 18,000 plus hours that we're putting a lot of stress on that will increasingly have more maintenance issues. And we're trying to balance this by starting to plan and roll out. And we're looking in the next 5 to 6 years that we'll have to replace two aircraft. So this is the first part of that, is replacing one aircraft at this point.
Okay, thank you. Could you give us both police and fire, and I'm not sure whether the emergency radio totally applies to both of them. I'm assuming there's some crossover there. Could you give us a very brief explanation as to this, the $9 million? And what I'd like to know is if this is not bonded, is this one of those luxuries that we can defer? Because some of these other things, I mean, let's face it, we may not like it, but we're not going to shut down tomorrow if we don't have an extra. I mean, it certainly cripples us, but we're not going to shut down. But I'd like to, communication seems like a fairly important item. So perhaps you could give us just a quick update on this or explanation to that.
Mayor, council members, the communications package that was in the original bond proposal was about $34.7 million, which encompassed the long-term plans for the radio communication system. Your comment that there's probably some crossover between police and fire is very accurate. The radio system totally supports both police and fire, as well as some other municipal operations like the utilities and Parks and Recreation Department. So there's some additional things beyond the public safety side. It gets funded under public safety because we're the primary users of that. We took the items that were part of what we would consider the long-range plan of that $34 million and removed them, and now we're looking at some particular items. There are some significant safety issues that relate to how we would dispatch. Maybe I can cover a couple of particular ones. One of the items that's part of this current proposed package is the building treatment. In some of the construction situations of city facility buildings over the last couple of years, the construction has been such that it prohibits our radio communications inside those buildings. That particularly puts fire and emergency medical personnel at risk of being able to communicate back with their dispatchers or with additional units that they may need on scene. So $1.3 million of this is to provide treatments to those buildings so that radio signals continue to work in them as they need to do.
Treatments being repeaters or that type of thing?
Primarily repeaters.
Okay.
Additional wiring in there to move the signal inside the building.
Okay.
$1.3 million of that is to upgrade the current existing microwave. The reason that that's a significant issue is 911 calls come into the center via cell phone or landline, whatever way the individual dials the 911 number. The way that we get the service provided, whether it's emergency medical services or police services or fire services, is through two methods. One, radio dispatch over a voice communication, or the computer communications to the individual units, because both fire and police vehicles have that equipment in them. That system has been upgraded out of operating funds in some areas that it could to maintain its currency and its operational viability. We're at a place now where the back-end pieces of the hardware, the channel banks and those kind of things that exist in our microwave facilities and in the home station of the communications facility, are in need of replacing them. So the reason for asking for that bond money is so that that can be done timely. If we were to space that out over operating period of time, we're looking at too long of a time. There's too high of a risk of failure of that equipment. We included in this package a thing called Thompson Peak. At the present time, we lease facilities at Thompson Peak to handle the wide area communications. This proposal is to allow us to partner in such a way that we don't have to any longer pay those lease payments, and we get a better coverage by partnering.
Just so everyone understands, Thompson Peak is over in the McDowell Mountains, and that's where our transmission facility or our tower or whatever you call it is.
One of our transmission facilities is at that peak in the McDowell Mountains, yes. Appreciate that clarification on that, sir. One of the other areas that's in this particular package is about $2.8 million for what's called the mobile data system. The present system is the original system that was installed in 1997 for communications with the police and fire computers in the cars and then the police in the fire trucks. That system is obviously aging due to some FCC regulations. Manufacturers are not manufacturing the replacement equipment any longer. They will totally stop that in 2011. So we're putting this item forth as a bond because we need a communication system to
ensure. And that's the data, for example, each fire engine and each police car has a computer, basically a computer in there, and that's the data that, for example, when a police officer pulls someone over, they can get updated information, real-time data based on a license check, those kind of things. And fire gets real-time data based on if they're fighting a fire or responding to an emergency. That's transmitted data over this system.
That's correct.
That shows up in the unit.
Correct.
And that's what will be compromised.
That's what would be compromised.
Councilmember Kavanaugh. I almost called you Congressman Kavanaugh. I'm sorry.
I'll take that. I've worked on this issue for a long time in my past service on council in terms of telecommunications, and I understand what's happened in terms of the federal level asking us or forcing us to go to the 700 megahertz system. One of the issues that I'm looking at, in if we're able to do these upgrades, will it enhance our ability to provide dispatch service to other communities? And the reason I ask this is that I think we have a good system in place. It has a far reach in terms of our dispatch capacity. Would it create the opportunity for us, for example, to have financial participation by other communities or entities to help reduce our share of the costs if we upgrade our system? Will this give us an opportunity in the future for other communities, perhaps for us to dispatch for them, and in turn receive compensation for that helps our overall public safety system?
Mayor, Councilmember Kavanaugh, there's two answers to that particular question. The first part is those other entities around us, notably the town of Gilbert and the Apache Junction Fire District, use this current system. We are in the same replacement mode with them as we are with our own police and fire departments. So that part of it is that essential. In terms of the ability to expand and provide additional services, that's part of the money that was reduced from this budget. Replacing the core microwave controllers that is included in this package, again, is essential to provide that continued service. And there is an intergovernmental agreement in place that provides from those other cities to reimburse Mesa for the services that are provided there. Chief, you have something you want to add to that?
No, Mayor and Council, information is correct. We do have current partners in the system, namely Apache Junction, the City of Apache Junction Fire District, and also Queen Creek and Gilbert. They do pay dispatch fees for those services, and that is all done under IGA, and we are in a complete partnership with those dispatch services.
And I'm assuming, or maybe I shouldn't assume, let's ask a question. If we invest this additional money into an upgraded system, will the rates that they pay to us or reimburse us reflect that additional investment so we will recoup that so we're not bearing an additional cost to that?
Mayor, in our current IGA, we calculate and evaluate the dispatch fees or the cost of dispatch services annually, and annually those fees are
adjusted.
Adjusted.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Higgins?
Just a quick question. If the current system was actually still supported by the manufacturer, would we still need new equipment to come up to date with changing stuff?
Excellent question, Mayor, Councilmember Higgins. The demands on data transmission have continually increased from year to year. The present system is far below the capacity that we need, particularly as both the fire department looks at more transmission of patient medical data. That's projects that are actually working, and as the police department looks at fingerprints and mug photos being available to the officers in the field. So we do need the ability to enhance the capacity of the system.
So the fact that it's not being supported by the manufacturer isn't really an issue?
Well, the fact that it isn't being supported by the manufacturer is going to be a killer. We'll get to the point that we have no more equipment, so when something breaks, we stop being able to send a call to a police officer. So that part is a hard fact. Getting the benefit of replacing the equipment has the potential to allow better transmission.
When you go out for quote for a new system, do you actually ask that question, how long will this equipment be supported? Or is that, do you just go with the least expensive on that issue?
Excellent question. In the RFP portion of the applications, we certainly look at the longevity of the equipment. Typically, a communication system is anticipated to have a viable life of about 5 to 8 years. As I mentioned, when this equipment was installed, was more than that ago. That's one controlling factor. The Federal Communications Commission makes decisions about what they're going to do with the radio frequencies that has an impact on whether the equipment can continue to be obtained. That may shorten the life of equipment that was acquired.
Mayor, the Associated Public Safety Officials is a national organization of public safety officials, obviously, that watches the communication systems for public safety across the country. They, several years ago, put in place what is called Project 25. It's essentially a national standard for communications. Within that standard, it requires people who build public safety communication systems to provide for backward compatibility, which means if you're using a system that's essentially outdated, but you want to buy a new one, the new ones have to allow the incorporation of the older systems to be continued to be used where they can. It also breaks down a lot of the proprietary competition that we've seen with technology where they essentially plan obsolescence to cause you to have to purchase the equipment again. I think that's the point that you're getting at.
I mean, people actually do that? What a shocker.
It's extremely difficult to do, as you would imagine, especially on a national level, given the lobbying efforts of communications companies. But it was something accomplished several years ago, and we actually incorporated that process into the CAD system that we currently have now, as well as the 800 megahertz system for radio communication that we have now.
Okay, thank you. Any other on this?
Mayor, if I may add one bit of information to Chief Kavanaugh.
Boy, we just got going everywhere, don't you?
I just demoted him.
You sit there long enough, you'll be King Kavanaugh.
Councilmember Kavanaugh mentioned the possibility of expanding our dispatch operation to create revenue that could offset future costs. We have, as Chief Bradbury mentioned, we already have three partners in our system. We have received interest from several others. The upgrades that we're talking about here keeps us in a position where our system is one of those systems that people would want to join. And we're looking at that rather actively. Chief Bradbury chaired a valley-wide group to take a look at regional wireless systems where there would be cooperation amongst all the agencies. And again, we've been actually doing presentations in the last several months to other cities interested in our communication capability and their ability to be a partner. So we're looking at that as a possible future opportunity.
Great, thank you. There's no other questions on communications. I'd like to move on and to the Fire Station 215, which is at the Gateway Airport. I'm not confused, but I'd like to know exactly what is our relationship there? Because the description in here about how Gateway, for example, would allow us to lease ground so we can provide them with that whole area with police and fire protection. If you could clarify for me the situation there and exactly why we're in a position to replace the station that's there, which is, while it might not be, state-of-the-art current, is certainly functionable. So maybe you could give me a little background. Give us a little background on that.
Mayor, others may be able to speak more specifically to the actual arrangement that the city has with Phoenix Mesa Gateway. Our fire's relationship is that we provide aircraft fire rescue, what we call ARF services, on the airport, which are required by the FAA in order for the airport to operate at a particular index. Most specifically, whenever they bring passengers onto the airport, the Federal Aviation Association requires that the locality, or the airport, I should say, provide for aircraft fire response. As you know, we moved into the facility provided by the old Williams Air Force Base, and the fire station that they had built probably back in the 50s or probably 40s. It's at a point, our relationship is that the airport provides cost recovery for us in terms of staffing of two people, which are the minimum requirements for the FAA for us to service that area. In terms of our arrangement with the property and the lease back and those kinds of things, I would have to defer to somebody who has a better background on that.
Mayor and Council, let me just kind of cover that. And because specifically, while this fire station is at or on the Phoenix Mesa Gateway Airport facility, while it serves the airport, it also serves beyond that. It's not specifically only conserved the airport. There are models out there where there are airports that have dedicated fire stations and equipment and manpower that only serve and are restricted to provide that service exclusively to an airport. And therefore, 100% of those costs, a majority of those costs, can be recovered paid for by the airport operations. In this case, this has become a location not only to serve, importantly, the airport operations, as was mentioned, by the dedication of two personnel as well as a piece of equipment, and I always forget what we aircraft rescue equipment, what there's probably other terms for it.
All the equipment.
But it also allows us to locate a fire presence in Southeast Mesa that also provides coverage for that entire area of Mesa that is rapidly being developed, including the campus across the street with a growing population, the student population there. And there are actually individuals who live on that campus. It is not exclusively a classroom setting. There are actually residents there 24 hours a day. So what's happened now recently is that as the airport is expanding the terminal with the activity that's going out there and the need to continue to expand that terminal, this location of this facility they've asked us to remove ourselves, is that a nice way of saying it, and to go to, because they need to expand in that direction. And so they're working with us, and I think we've identified potential sites on the location. Is that correct, Gary?
That's correct.
Okay. So they've identified that. Now the question becomes, well, if we're going to bear the cost of a new fire station, and actually it will include a space for police officers, as you can imagine, with all the activity and all the security measures surrounding an airport, having a presence at the airport for the police officers to be located is ideal. Otherwise, I think the closest substation is Superstition Springs,
correct.
Which you can imagine, which is at Ellsworth and, what is it? I'm not sure.
South of Baseline.
So it's quite a distance as far as being able to stage up. So the agreement, at this point, we understand, and I think the airport understands that.
Real quickly, does ASU have campus police at the Polytechnic, or do we handle that also?
You know what, I'm not sure.
They do?
They do.
Okay, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt, but that just
raised that question. I think most of our presence has been, I think
airport.
It's for the airport, but the terminal activity.
Not
correct.
Campus police,
yeah.
Not
is it
ASU
full-time
campus.
Present?
Yes.
Mayor, Council, yes, ASU does have full-time presence there. Their numbers, I don't have the exact numbers, but it's very minor, and we do assist them at times.
I think on the police function really for this area relates specifically to the terminal, I think is where
airport,
you all, it's seeing more activity. Yeah.
Okay. And Gateway has their own security, or do they have security that handles the perimeter, but not criminal type activity? I mean, we don't handle security for Gateway, we just handle police issues as it relates to terminal and that kind of thing.
Okay.
Chief Mesa, do they have security personnel for the airport? I don't know.
They have maintenance security, which they don't get involved with anything that's criminal or suspicious activity. Okay. But we have primary responsibility for that.
Incursion into the airport property, or they keep an eye out and probably call you. Yeah, just a presence. Okay.
Now, I think the question becomes at some point, and I think we'll need to work with the airport authority, of which we are a member, talk to ourselves, and our other partners about the future as we move forward with these improvements and others. I mean, this is not, we're not limited to this. The city of Mesa has contributed significant costs to the airport for roadway development, infrastructure development. I believe this is another one of those costs that we could figure out how to apportion some of that relates directly to the airport. And while the airport may not be in a position today from a cash standpoint to reimburse us immediately, certainly as all cities that participate out there today, we're developing a credit, if you would, that can be reimbursed to the cities at some point in the future. And I think this is one of those expenses or a portion of this expense that we could certainly visit with the airport authority about. If we provide the service and the capital cost, can we work on some kind of reimbursement in the future?
Okay, thank you. I'm almost afraid to ask this, but I need to. Let's say we don't build this station. Let's say we don't. Are the wrecking balls going to come anyway, and then what happens?
I don't think that the airport authority would do that to Mesa, but I think what it would do is it would put them in a position where they would have to turn away flights in the future. And what's remarkable is actually there's current discussions, and I know this goes in the face of everything we're hearing out in the industry, but I'm having a meeting tomorrow about how to accommodate additional flights out at Gateway in the near future. So
my understanding is that the current terminal as is is limited, and matter of fact can only handle like two flights.
Yeah, right now they're the capacity and the timing of when they want those flights to come in, they need
waiting
to be able
rooms,
to spread those
that,
out for the ticket offices, and so that needs to expand.
Councilmember Summers?
I'm torn on this one. On one hand, we need to get out of the way for airport growth and economic development. I can tell you right now we have two full-time planes at the Gateway Airport with the probability, the likelihood that that's going to double in the next 2 years. So we will see an increase from, where are we now, about 300,000 to about 500,000 to 600,000 by the year 2010.
That sounds about right, yeah.
There's a possibility of a fifth and a sixth. The Gateway likes to have the option of likes to keep two additional gates so that if we have interest from another airline or for an existing airline for expansion, we can say, yes, we have the room for you, come on in, and we can grow right now, as opposed to can you wait 2 years, because that option may not be there in 2 years. The expansion of the terminal, as I understand it, we can expand two more gates without moving the fire station, but beyond 2010, the fire station has to move. The reason I'm torn is that we need to build this fire station for the growth of the airport. We also need to accommodate more equipment. As the number of passengers rises, our index is also going to have to increase, meaning there needs to be more fire equipment and more personnel dedicated to that airport. We have to plan for that. We don't have the facilities for that right now. On the other hand, this really isn't jumping out and increasing the level of service overall to the community. It's replacing a station that exists that, from the moment, is satisfactory. And that's going to be a tough decision. One thing we may want to consider that wouldn't change the bond amount any is to staff for one. We have four fire stations we had planned. One staffed already, and three others are not. One of those, according to the new bond package, if I'm correct, will be staffed with a fire station. That's 219 over in Mountain Road and Elliott is a possibility. We have another station that needs to be built at 54th and Main in 5, because that's going to cover a big gap in your district, but also a little bit in mine, because Sunland Village has a fire station, but also a lot of demand in that area, so they need some coverage. A possibility would be to do what we're doing right now at Station 203, is and budget for the addition of another fire company, which we would put an adjoining station, maybe 209, which is running a lot of traffic over there off of Southern and Power. We would staff that station, and when we come back for a bond package in 2 years for the remainder of this five-year package, then we would build that firehouse. But at least then we would have an improvement in services in that central region with the addition of a company, and we would build the facility after that 2 years, which is when we were planning on that one to begin with. That's just an idea.
Since we're on, since good segue, Chief, we've gone from, I think, four fire station down to two, which is 18, which is in the west side, I believe. That's at Alma School and 8th Avenue, and then 8th Street, I'm sorry, and then 219, which is in the southeast side. I know it doesn't completely fill your absolute need, but maybe a little explanation is why we went from four down to two. I think we have two and then two sites for the additional. Is that a timing issue? Is that a critical needs issue or what?
Well, I think as Chief Gascon pointed out, all these public safety decisions are very difficult, or Chris Brady did. We're really at a point where we do need all these facilities. But given the circumstances, we were forced to make some very difficult decisions. Several years ago, as we began to draft the first, from our strategic plan, essentially, the first bond request, we actually were looking at only stations on the west side. But what we have seen is an unbelievable surge of growth. The area in particular that is east of the General Motors Proving Ground has exploded with service demand. The closest station is station 217, and it's quite a long run down there, and the roadways are difficult to navigate. So that has emerged as a very high priority for us in terms of new service. We definitely need to do that. The other fire station, 218, which we have discussed, as you may recall, that engine company currently runs out of station 203 on Broadway. That is the busiest firehouse in the city, and even adding 218 to that station only increased the number of services, number of service calls for that area, believe it or not. Just demonstrates how many times a secondary unit had to cover for that particular region.
Councilmember,
just to be clear, that what it did was is it raised the number of calls that are recorded for that house.
Yeah.
But it reduced the number of calls for the surrounding houses because then they didn't have to cover that.
That's correct. Thanks for that clarification.
Fire stations don't create business. They respond to it.
Right.
That's correct.
No, that's true. And to be a little more specific without going on too long here, when engine 203 was running out of there by themselves, they were running around 4,000 calls a year, which is about 1,500 calls busier than we'd like to see. When we put engine 218 in there on a temporary basis, what we found was is engine 203's calls went to about 2,600, and the new engine 218 calls were about 2,500. So again, as I mentioned earlier, that's a kind of a black hole for service demand. And it just, again, illustrates the number of times a secondary unit had to respond in there. One of the areas that the secondary units come from specifically is from the north. As you know, with the recent opening of Riverview, there's a considerable amount of activity in that area that wasn't there before. We know that the service demand there has been consistent and will continue to be that way and will only grow when Riverview begins to fill out and generate any more activity. Also, we have, it was a decision that went similar to the police department situation. We decided to put that engine company in there regardless of the fact that it was an untenable living situation for the members. They've been extremely workable with this solution, understanding the need. But that's an additional reason I think that we do need to relocate that fire station. We already own the property. It's been scheduled for some time. The community there has been deeply involved in the selection of this fire station, the location of this fire station. We're getting ready to discuss with them the different levels of elevation in terms of the exterior of what that fire station could look like because it's already designed. And we already have an architect on board. So that's the reason that for the second fire station there, although it's not an addition of resources, to help reduce response times. We are looking at a fairly comprehensive approach to reviewing lots of different alternatives to address our response times, given the two-year bond potential here and the potential delay that that could occur, that could involve in that in terms of adding resources in the immediate future.
Thank you. Councilmember Higgins?
Just a question. From this map, when you have there's a considerable amount of red area, which means over 4 minutes in District 5. I just wondered, you say over 4 minutes. How much over 4 minutes? Like 4 minutes and 20 seconds or 8 minutes to get to these service areas out here? I mean, like on this sheet,
right.
We had five fire stations, I mean, planned in that area. And, you know, now we're not getting one out there, so.
Well, answer your first question first. We have the ability to show over 4 minutes, 4 to 6 minutes, 6 to 8, 8 to 10, 10 to 12. And we've looked at those. Those maps are very busy,
okay.
But I'd be very happy to provide one. Also, when you take that number of calls and you lay them on there, they begin to cover each other. So it's very hard to see. So separate maps for each of those things are something that we've used before. We did take a look at a map recently. I was a little surprised by. We really anticipated that. What we did is we asked the system to tell us how many calls are over 6 minutes. And what we expected is there to be a high concentration on the east side. And then the area we call the red zone, which is a corridor between Broadway and about University, that runs essentially from the west side of the city to the east side, where we have a very high concentration of calls. So we anticipate that the extended times are really going to be the east side because of the travel time. Mm-hmm. What we're seeing in the neighborhoods and the inner city is more and more often the secondary unit is having to cover that. So the people that live in neighborhoods today that have a fire station that's been there for years, who feel very comfortable that they have their own fire station and they don't need to worry about what's going on in the rest of the city, we need to remind them that because of what's going on in the rest of the city and our need to deploy in a way that has uniformity for coverage, that fire truck in that fire station is not there nearly as often as they used to be, and the chances of a secondary unit coming in with a much longer response time is going up. And after all of that, I've forgotten your second question.
Well, I mean, it just shows, you know, like I'm thinking when you look at this red map, you know, there's Red Mountain High School's in there, a bunch of elementary schools, a lot of stuff, and, you know, there's no plan to cover those areas where there was before. I just wondered
exactly
how you decided to cut out which fire stations out of the bond.
One of the decisions that went into it is the new pilot program that we've been working on, the transitional response vehicles. We know that most of our call volume is EMS. We also know that the transitional response vehicles can really only support us in areas where we have very high activity, where there's an existing fire station. So we would be looking at that program, which if you take a look at the cost of expanding that program versus adding fire trucks and fire companies, is considerably less expensive. We believe that that will help us address at least the medical side of the response time issue for those particular regions. But again, that's not included in this bond request. It's something that we would have to look at and work with the Public Safety Committee and work through the council to address in the future.
And Mayor, Councilmember Higgins, I think one of the criteria we looked at is kind of overlaying a lot of considerations, some that you've just talked about where the need exists, but also identifying areas where we already own the property. So we were in a strong position that we wouldn't have to be out acquiring land and doing all that. So that's kind of where we ended up with the two that you see here. Properties that we controlled, we could go develop and put those in. But you do notice in the package that it also speaks to looking at future sites acquiring the sites for future stations, which would allow us to keep moving forward. And so if there's another bond package in the future, we could be in a better position.
Vice Mayor Jones.
As we talk about this whole bond package and the reduction, we all need to remember that first it started out with the Citizen Bond Committee, and they had a very large package that they felt was important. The previous council took a look at it. We pared it down, and brought it down to a five-year capital program where we felt these were the critical needs that we really have to address in the next 5 years. And we're at a point right now where the decision has been made to reduce it to a two-year capital project. So we have asked staff to come back and say, give us your very most critical that you need to address in the next 2 year for a capital program for starting in November when this comes to a vote of the people. So everything that we have been addressing in the last couple of years are critical needs. They are things that we absolutely need to do, but what the decision is being made is how are we going to make it palatable to the voters where they are willing to say, yes, we really do need this. We're willing to pay a secondary property tax to do it. That's what the discussion is right now. And your question, Dina, is good. Paring down, how did you decide which two to do? Because I know there's an area in the south part of your district where we already own property for a fire station. The people there supported doing it, and they're willing to vote for bonds. And now when that's been pulled off the table for this round, we could lose votes there because they're saying, hey, we've supported it, and now you're taking away that site for us. And so it's a very delicate balancing act to make sure that we get the support we need to move forward without diminishing the fact that every project that we've been addressing the last couple of years are critical needs that are going to have to be addressed. We're just taking a five-year package and saying we're going to take the most critical things for the next 2 years. And that's what we're going to be presenting right now.
Councilmember Richens, haven't forgotten about you. Do you have any questions or comments?
If we wanted to add stuff back in, what say we want to do a couple more fire stations in the two-year bond? Is that on the table?
I think everything's on the table now, but I'll have Ms. Spinner explain the technicalities of that.
Mayor, you're correct. Councilmember Richens, the council approved back in November the $408 million bond package. That was passed by a resolution. So based on the council's direction today, if you add or subtract projects from that package that was initially passed by the council in November, we'll come back with an amended resolution. At the time that you were considering the amended resolution, again, because it's a resolution, council can make any changes up to and including the night that it is considered.
Okay.
Thank you.
I know we've been talking about police and fire needs. Were we going to transition to transportation again, or what was the course this direction, this conversation's going as we drag it along ever so?
We can go back to that. Let's first ask, are there any other questions on transportation that we need to? Public safety, I'm sorry. It's been a long process so far. Councilmember Fenter.
Thanks. Chief, I appreciate your comments along the lines of TRV. Just a comment along, I think with the transitioning boomers coming into the system, Mesa has had a traditional retirement community segment. We're growing. I don't know personally if the answer is more fire stations or if it's a new way to deliver service to that 80% of the call volume that we do. And I appreciate that you're thinking along the lines of a new way to deliver service to those calls that can be handled differently. And so what I would like to see is as we go down the road, it may not be a physical station that we consider, but it may be a new program that delivers the service in a timely manner to that segment or that increased call load down the road. So I've had an opportunity to visit with you in the last couple of days, and I know that you're committed to that. You're thinking outside the box. I know people don't like to hear that term, but in the fire service, I think it's important that we just look at every possible avenue, and I know you support that, of delivering service differently, and it may not be a physical hard station in an area. It might be a different service delivery.
Okay, Councilmember Richens.
Yeah.
I believe if we're done with public safety, then Dan, if you want to come back on up. And we can address your, thank you very much, by the way. Appreciate it.
When did we want to have a conversation about what remains and based on staff recommendations and other projects we might want to look at? We can do that next week. Or?
Mr. Brady, how would you like to best proceed?
You know, I would suggest, frankly, if there are projects that the council would like us to, I guess either way, eliminate or pull off or add to, I think we would this would be a good opportunity to kind of at least bring that up. My suggestion to the council, and certainly go either way, is, as the city attorney was mentioning, we need to bring this back to a formal council, or I guess to a council agenda. I'm not sure it needs to be a council meeting, but I would propose, instead of doing it on June 23rd, which is a very large agenda right now because of the budget, we could either do that agenda or we could do it on July 1st, which gives us at least a few more times. I don't know how many more times you want to talk about it.
Well, I think we've got our, and I appreciate staff coming back and with the program there. I know it's been difficult because, once again, we are doing a twofold where we're not only cutting time, but we're actually getting down to that thing where, you know, which project is the most critical. If we say they're critical, are they more critical than the other? And that's a judgment call a lot of times.
Right.
And I appreciate that you've gone through this process and have done that. I know that at the fringes, you know, that, you know, the we're sort of, you know, it's, I feel like we're in the March Madness, where we're talking about bubble teams now. And, you know, I don't want to be light about it, but in a sense, I know there are things that will have differences of opinion. Rather than hash that out in here, maybe another week or two where if there are specific items, I know Councilmember Summers has some questions, for example, Broadway Road, things like that. Maybe we can go back and we can look at those specific
sure.
things and come back in a week or two.
That'd be fine.
With the resolution to finalize that. I think we're pretty well set in here.
Right. And Mayor and Council, let me just also add this. While we have pared it down, it's still a two-year, we focus on this two-year. There's a certain capacity even within the staff to even deliver on these
right.
projects also. So while I appreciate the concern about projects that may not be on here, we think there's a lot of important projects that are not here,
yeah.
and maybe there's a future for them. But there is a certain capacity within even the staff ability to acquire, to construct, design, that we're also going to be somewhat sensitive to and how we can budget for those into the
future. I think we need to remember that, once again, one of the reasons we're looking at this is the consideration of where we are today, the economic conditions, the challenges we have, not only as a city government, but as a community and individual citizens. And so as we look at that, remember, you know, this is a fluid project. You know, we're going to continually look at the needs of the community, and, you know, those will change like it's changed in the last 7-8 months. So I appreciate what you're saying about how this is not the last time we'll look at this.
Right.
It hasn't been the first time, as Vice Mayor Jones said, and I'm sure that, you know, 6, 8, 12, 18 months from now, we'll continue on this process. So if the decisions we make today are not final in any by any stretch of the imagination. Okay.
I would just add one practical viewpoint here, and it's on what you want
budget.
To see in your documents in the
yeah.
budget. So do we want to go from the greatest amount of capacity, which would be based on the 5-year that we already have in that the CIP program? You will be adopting a CIP book with this. So it's just a practicality issue of what you want to see in your documents. Or do you want to go to this modified 2-year that we've proposed, and you can still make modifications? The only issue gets is in 08-09, when we adopt the legal limit, that would be the point you start constricting yourselves.
But Chuck, we will make that decision next year, right?
We can make that decision. All I'm looking for is for our legal documents that we'll be adopting on the 23rd.
But so we've already capped ourselves.
We've already capped ourselves, but I do get a little reduced capacity. The budget will show is going down if you have this 2-year program.
Well, but the legal cap that we approved on June 2nd was based on the $408 million
correct.
Program.
Correct.
So we're capped. So anything we approve within should fit in.
Well, and I guess the only practical thing is we'll start basing forecasts off of this.
Gotcha.
Oh.
And so forth for the fall. So all I'm saying today is if you want to give direction, I will go with the greatest amount of capacity for you so you have the greatest amount of freedom.
Why don't we do that? I mean, because what we're talking about is in our modeling and in your budgeting process, I'd like to be as conservative as possible.
Right.
So let's take the limit, and unless there's any other council member has some issues with that, I feel more comfortable going with the most conservative we can, and
okay.
with the idea that I think we're geared toward operating under that cap.
Okay.
Yes.
And I'd rather have that than a surprise.
Okay.
Everyone in Councilmember Richens, is that okay with you?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then just to follow up, maybe to answer Councilman Rich, if he would like to visit with me, and we can then maybe come back in a couple of weeks.
Why don't
and
we do that? I think right now the sense that I'm getting is that we will, unless there are, I know there are some specific issues, for example, that Councilmember Richens, some questions as it relates to that. Are there any other issues that councilmembers you'd like to bring up?
Right. I'd like to just throw in one thing that I observed as I looked through the not only the $408 billion package, but the revised package. There wasn't anything in there in regards to transit, and where I'm getting a lot of constituent email and phone calls about transit issues. And I know this is cap only and doesn't do anything to address adding new bus routes, but we maybe have the opportunity in the short term to add some shelters or something like that, especially going to some Saturday bus service that's an hour in between buses coming. That's a big issue in the community right now, and I don't think gas is going to get any cheaper, and I would just like that consideration to be on the table early on.
And Mayor, Councilman Richens, actually, we can visit with you about the schedule for bus shelters, because on the 23rd, I think we're approving 10 more. So, and we have a schedule of when we're supposed to implement those. So we can talk about that and maybe how that might relate to this subject, too. But I'll be glad to visit with you about that.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions or comments, Councilmember Summers?
I'll make one comment. I'm kind of looking over at Gary from the Republic, because I think it's important to remember as this gets published, that folks need to provide their feedback. We're sitting here trying to adjust a five-year package and say, let's look at 2 years, and which projects do we want to move here and there, and we're talking about how critical they are, and it seems that all of them are critical or all of them are necessary, and at no point have we looked at something and went, I don't think we need that, ever. We looked at that, well, do I want the first 2 years and the last 2 years? We haven't had a conversation yet that there's still that possibility, depending on what our constituents would like to see, that we just approve the five-year package. Or amend the five-year package, but go forward with the five-year package as discussed by the previous council. I know that really isn't the flavor of what's going on here right now, but we shouldn't limit ourselves to saying we're going to do a two-year and narrow this down when the possibility is if everything is critical and we need these things and we are going to save more money by accelerating these projects. If our voters feel that all these are necessary projects and they need to provide that feedback and say that, why don't you just do the five-year project? So let's keep that on the table as well as we proceed forward.
And Mayor, Council, if you would like, I don't want to presume too much, but would you like us to go ahead and at least post the list these projects on the website so at least they can see what's currently before the council as being discussed, the listing projects?
I would like to, because I agree with what...
Well, in comparison.
Yeah, I would like
that's
to.
What I'm saying. We already...
The
already
one's
have,
already there. The $408 million is already posted.
Correct, and that's why I was suggesting. Yeah. Would you like us to show this list too, or
I would simply because the direction we had from the council last week was to come back with a pared down package, and I think that we need to post that people can have the same that the voting public can have the same information that we've had and compare the two.
Correct. Okay.
And provide feedback to the council. We have another week or so, or a couple weeks, to really look at this.
Okay.
You know, if there's no other, I'd just like to make one final comment. I mean, I've gone back and forth as to how to approach this whole process. And frankly, I've seriously considered something that Councilmember Fenter has brought up and others have brought up, which is to delay this. I think we're in very serious financial straits, and I think that as a community, and I think we have challenges out there, and we need to be respectful of that. As I've considered that, though, I realize that a community needs to continue to invest in itself, in bad times as well as good times. We can't delay reinvesting in a community. We need to be very sensitive as to the types of investment, as to the economy of the investment, as to the timing of those investments, but I believe we need to continue to invest. So I personally am considered with moving ahead with something, because I believe that to do nothing puts this entire community at a real disadvantage. And so as we go through this, I truly like to consider that we need to make an investment, whatever that level is. I appreciate, as we go through these numbers, I appreciate staff considering the situation and the situation of the community. I'd like to issue a challenge, too, that as we, whatever level we approve, that as we go through this, we recognize that things like for new buildings, whatever they might be, are approvals on a maximum amount. And I don't think anything would make us happier than if the actual plans that come in are for amounts much lower than that, simply because I think we need to rethink the way that we build things and the way that we provide our services has been brought up by many of the members here. So the fire stations we build in the future may not be the fire stations we have built in the past. We need to recognize that aesthetically they do make a presence, they do say something, but they need to be economical, they need to be efficient, and we need to really think about how we're doing things. So as we approve these numbers, I would hope, and I see, from what I've seen so far, I would expect that we would come back with a new train of thought as to how we actually carry out the things that we're doing. Vice Mayor Jones?
And thank you, Mayor, on that. The timing issue is critical in that, and Chuck, help me with this one. Even if we approve a bond package and a secondary property tax in November, what is the time frame before we actually start seeing the dollars from that?
If that is approved, the following fiscal year we will send out the first.
It literally will take a year before we start having funds to do it. So we're looking a year and a half from now before we would actually have funds to do any of these projects we're talking about.
Well, we would actually, from a cash flow standpoint, do what we call notices of intent to reimburse.
We would reimburse ourselves.
And then we'd reimburse ourselves.
But we wouldn't see those tax dollars for a year.
Correct.
After
correct.
The election.
That's correct.
Thank you. All right. Thank you very much. We'll move on. I appreciate the presentation and the information. We'll move on to agenda item 2, which is here a presentation discussed by direction on the 08-09 budget, specifically 2 items, Washington Activity Center and the residential planning and building safety fees.
Mayor and Council, I think we're going to start off with the Washington Activity Center. Is that correct? Mike, you'll make the presentation. And Carolyn Olson is joining him, and we'll find out why.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. My name is Mike Holste. I'm the Assistant Director of Programming for the Parks, Recreation, and Commercial Facilities.
And I'm Carolyn Olson, the Director of Housing and Revitalization in the Neighborhood Services Department.
And at the June 2nd meeting, council meeting, it was recommended that that funds be found to keep the Washington Activity Center open at least through the summer, and to try and find additional uses for the facility. At this time, we'd like to recommend a funding option that would keep the center open for the entire fiscal year of 08-09, which would allow for some comprehensive neighborhood community meetings that we could really find a long-term solution to the operations of the Washington Activity Center. And I'm happy to report that since the June 2nd meeting, Diane Hunter and her excellent staff have started a comprehensive summer program. They're operating Monday through Friday from 10 until 7 o'clock in the evening. They have 60 to 80, even more children per day from that immediate neighborhood that are working at playing at the center. We have 2 stages for our funding option. The first one, to keep it open from July 1st through the end of August, maybe shortly into September, would come through the Parks and Recreation, where we would have to come up with about $25,000 to keep the center open at its current stage. And we would do that by eliminating 2 of our 20 after-school sites that would take place. We offer 20 sites currently in the upcoming school year, and by taking away 2 of those, we'd be able to fund the Washington Activity Center for that $25,000. And then the other option, I was with Caroline, and she's going to talk about that.
We're proposing at this time using Community Development Block Grant Funds, CDBG funds, to offset that funding for the Washington Activity Center from September 1st through June 30th of next year. And that funding would come from the contingency fund of the CDBG funds that we currently have on hand.
And Mayor and Councilman Caroline, why don't we explain why we have a contingency fund, contributes to it, and in the past, how have we used that? Because I know we've had in the past where council has had other projects they wanted to fund but weren't able to, and that this was a funding source for that. So let me talk a little bit about what creates the contingency fund and how has it been used in the past.
We're required to have a percentage of our from HUD, the Housing and Urban Development, United States Housing and Development Department, where we get our funds. We're required to have a percentage of those funds be have those on hand at all time for contingency, and the fund does grow because we have close out of projects and some projects that don't actually occur, so we do build up a fair amount of funds in that regard that give us an opportunity to do emergency projects that come available when necessary.
Can you give, is there, can you remember any recent, the ones we funded with the, I'm trying to remember, I'm not doing a very good job remembering some projects. I know there's been some projects, we've been able to provide some funding for capital projects or some street lights maybe or something like that, I think in the past. But it's a contingency, so we use it really for not an ongoing kind of program. So that's, I guess my caution, what I'm trying to, my point here is, while we're providing, if we identify the source and council agrees to it for this next year for the Washington Activity Center, it really isn't, the contingency funds are not a ongoing solution beyond that point. It would really have to be considered as part of a
temporary.
Yeah, it'd be a temporary, and if we were to do it long term, we'd probably want to have some other agency come in and look at taking that over and compete with the other priorities that are funded from these funds. I guess that's what I was trying to say.
Okay. Any questions for council? Vice Mayor. Council Member Higgins and then Vice Mayor Jones.
Mayor, I wondered what schools you have identified to close their after-school programs. Because, I'm a little, it's kind of hard to say, oh, we're going to close these two and keep that one open. And what happens to all those other children in the fall without the after-school program? So.
Right. The current fund, actually, part of our budget reduction for this year, we went from 32 sites that we have been offering in the past down to 20. We haven't established those yet because what happens if the schools are currently out, and as soon as they come, the administration comes back in late July and August, we submit a letter of intent to all the schools that are interested in having the after-school program. They give it back to us, and then what we do is try and pick, what we will do is pick our 18 or 20 best sites citywide and try and make sure that we have coverage completely around the city based upon the needs and the actually the intent of the school. Some of the principals have other activities at their schools where they really don't need an after-school program, but this will be the first time that we've actually only had 20 sites, or in this case 18 sites. So I really can't specifically say which would those would be, but we would have that at the end of July.
Do you know how many children are in those programs?
Our best programs generally average anywhere between anywhere from 100 to we generally average about anywhere between 1,500 to 2,000 children a semester. So that was in our old programs. The best ones have several 100, maybe more, sometimes slightly less. We have some sites though that will only have 10 or 20. We generally on our really good sites we offer a first through third grade component, and then we have a fourth through six. And it just depends upon the area.
Okay. So. Thank you.
Vice Mayor.
Okay, so you're talking about instead of 20 sites, 18 sites, and you submit to the school, say, here's what we're going to have available, and they'll see which one's going to accommodate, and then you'll set that up to spread throughout the city.
Right. Actually, they'll come back to us, and there may be 24 sites or 24 schools could respond back saying we would like to have an after-school program. We haven't actually finally decided. It may be that we might do a certain schools on one semester and then do another set of schools on the other semester. Some cities have done some things like that. I know Gilbert has done that in some of their programs. We've never done it that way, but it's a way to look at and try and spread out our funding and try and spread out our need as much as possible.
Okay. I'm looking at what if we did not take those two schools, pull that out of the mix and just focus on the community development block grant, CBDG. There we go. It's easier to say the acronyms, but we got to clarify.
Yeah, and I'm going to rescind my, because, let's just use it judiciously, okay?
Yeah. As long as everybody understands what we're speaking of, how's that? But you're talking about funding from September through June. Is there a particular reason why we would do that and maybe not shift covering the Washington Center from the beginning of the summer through partway through the year? How's that breakdown?
What we have to do is amend our annual plan in order to do this project because it was not approved previously. So we have to go through an approval process, and that'll take about 60 days through a publishing process and two open meetings that we have to have that were required. And we're guessing, if all goes well, that 60 days should do that.
Well, then the question would be, could we just use contingency and replenish that contingency without reducing the two other schools? We've already gone from 32 down to 20.
Right, but if you're asking the question is, can we reimburse ourselves for the 60 days during the process? And I don't think allowable to do that.
Okay.
I think we have to be, when we're going through the notification, we're saying from this point forward.
Councilmember Kavanaugh.
Thank you, Mayor. I just want to commend staff for coming up with this plan. If you talk to elected officials who have served during the last 30 years, or city staff who have worked in the last 30 years on this project, you will understand that this really is an important symbol of our commitment to the underserved community. And it's been a very good example, I think, of the city partnership with the community, and it's important, I believe, for us to continue the program. And I do appreciate the creativeness of staff in helping to keep the center open for this year, and I hope that we, as a council, as a city, as a community, can explore some viable options for ongoing continuation. So I do support the recommendation by staff. Thanks.
Vice Mayor Jones.
And I want to reiterate the comment that we made back on June 2nd is looking for nonprofits or people in the neighborhood who are willing to step forward to operate programs, because what we were talking about was not chaining the doors, because the facility itself would remain. We're talking about staffing of programs to accommodate the kids who come for this program. So we are still making the invitation to those in the neighborhood, nonprofits who will step up to help these kids, because this, even using the community development block grant, we're talking about a one shot, not ongoing. And so even if we extend it now, we still need to have people step up to make the program continue after the coming year.
Thank you. Any other comments? Councilmember Richens?
No, you guys have been asking the questions I had written down, so thanks.
Okay, thank you. And to echo what Councilmember Jones, I mean, we're caught between that proverbial rock and hard place that I know you've gone through a lot more than I have. I'm very concerned about eliminating a summer program for youth, especially in this area midsummer. And I think that's what brought it up to begin with, is I think we were all troubled with that. We're committed to doing whatever we can, especially for this facility, simply because of its history, its location, and the fact that, you know, we have a lot of programs that do really well, and, you know, it troubles me that we're talking about eliminating two programs and trading, but we have to make those tough decisions sometime. But to reiterate what Councilmember Jones, or Vice Mayor Jones, has said, I think we need to realize that these are temporary fixes, and those who are involved, we need to figure out how to work and how to come in to create partnerships and come into things long term to make sure these programs are viable. I think what I'm hearing is the sense of the council is we're committed to doing what the city can, but we have to realize that this has got to be more of a community effort, and we're going to have to, I'd like to buy time for some of these programs to know what's coming up so that they can work on their end to come up with things. For example, at Washington, we do have a building. We can support that building, but perhaps we're going to have to bring someone else in to help us provide these services at the level that are required. I don't believe we need a formal action because it'll be included in the budget that comes up.
Correct. I'm hearing the direction of council will move forward with this, and that's
move forward
what we'll do.
With this, with that instruction, and then it'll be wrapped into the formal budget.
Correct. And we'll be coming back in September timeframe, Carolyn, with the amendment. Would this council have to approve the amendment to the CDBG funding?
Yes.
Okay. So, but yet we'll take care of it. Yeah. There. I think as long as I gather.
I think
a
unless
consensus
there's unless
forward.
There's a negative, I believe that's the direction.
Great. Thank you,
Mr. Brady. Thank you very much. Thank appreciate you. It. Okay.
Mayor Smith?
Yes, Councilmember Richens.
With your permission, I'm going to have to cut out a little early on this discussion, but I appreciate the questions the fellow council members and the mayor and the staff and the great job they've done.
Okay, thank you. What if I don't give you permission?
No.
Thank you.
By the phone.
Thanks.
Thank you. Bye.
We can order the police chief to have
that's right. Mr. Wesley, Ms. Solanka, thank you very much for being here. Just a little background, the reason why we have this is, as we can see by the by the backup. This is a very complicated issue, and I don't believe we need to get into all the details of it. I believe, though, that this was an issue that was brought up, and I know that there are some stakeholders that were going to question this. And in fairness to everyone here on the council, since we are new and did not have the luxury of going through your presentation before, I wanted to enable us to be able to appropriately respond and to decide on this with some background. So, you know, just as a that's why I asked actually to bring this back up so we could have that opportunity and the other council members could ask questions. So you don't need to get into the details, but I believe that an overview and an explanation of the thought process would be appropriate. So I'll turn it over to you.
Okay, we'll try to be brief. What we did want to do was just briefly review the Building Safety Division and planning funding sources, give you just a real brief high-level understanding of what our response to recent economic conditions has been over the past 6 to 9 months, and then also specifically to review the fee increases with the emphasis on the residential fees, which is where most of the concern has come from. Building Safety Division is a restricted fund. Our operations are tied strictly to permit fees. We have no subsequent funding from the general fund. The Building Safety Restricted Fund also funds approximately 6 positions in the Planning Division and a portion of engineering services specifically related to improving city infrastructure and engineering inspections. The Planning Division currently has a goal of approximately 30% cost recovery. 70% comes from the general fund, again with our goal for next year of approximately 30% of the cost of operations coming from application fees. Our bottom line is that our service levels are really driven by the revenue that we bring in. Approximately 9 months ago, we all began to understand what was happening to the economy. We began to see a drastic turn down in both residential construction as well as commercial to a lesser extent. In response to that, we've initiated some significant cost-cutting initiatives in both planning and building safety. Just briefly to review those, beginning fiscal year 07-08, we had 46 full-time equivalent positions in planning. Because of the economic downturn, we've eliminated 8 full-time positions and 2 additional part-time positions. We've also eliminated interns. We had an intergovernmental agreement with Mesa Public Schools to split funding on 1 position, and we've eliminated all temporary contracted services. We've also eliminated or reduced hardware and software upgrades, other services and commodities. Our projected savings for fiscal year 08-09 are just under $1.4 million. In the building safety area, beginning fiscal year 07-08, we had 117 full-time equivalent positions. Through the reduction in workforce program that we've been through, we've eliminated 43 full-time positions and 2 part-time positions. We've also significantly reduced the costs associated with those staff positions, for example, vehicles, computers, that kind of thing. We have closed the East Mesa Service Center office. We no longer accept plans or issue permits through that office. Everyone has to come downtown. We've reduced other services and commodities, again, for an expected savings in 08-09 of just under $3 million in the Building Safety Restricted Fund. I'm going to turn over the discussion of the proposed fee increases to John in planning, and then I'll talk about the building safety fees.
Mayor and Council, as we worked through our budget this last year, and Christine has already outlined the cost reduction measures that we took as we move through this year and into next year, we also looked at how we might address the revenues to get to that 70-30% balance. And so we prepared a list of fee increases that we took to Council on May 5th, and they reviewed those and approved all of them except as they apply to the single residence types of applications that we receive, and had that brought back to this council so they could consider it in combination with the rest of the fee increases for building safety and how those might work together. So you do have that on your June 23rd agenda for consideration. So what we will be presenting from the planning side at that time are the applications as they apply for single residence applications only for pre-submittals, rezonings, site plans, and the combination, as well as the overall technology fee that Christine will talk about a little bit more as it applies to both planning and building safety. So we have for you then the current fees and the proposed fees as they would apply to these single residence R16 through R190 type applications on this chart. Our fees are structured so that we have
a base amount that we charge for all applications, and then a per acre fee that we add on top of that, and that's on a sliding scale, and the amount per acre drops as the size of the application goes up. So you can see on this chart, on the pre-sub, going from 162 to 400. We've already done that for everything but the single residence. For the rest of them, for the rezoning, the 1944 base to a 2400 base, and the sliding scale site plans, to get the base just for all of these from the 1944 to 2400, and then that sliding scale goes up for the applications also. And then the final slide here that I have, we've done a comparison of today versus what the new fee schedule would be, just taking a 60-acre, 103-lot subdivision, and you can see that it goes from approximately $33,000 to a little bit over $35,000, about $36,000 for that total subdivision cost through the planning process with that change in the zoning applications, the addition of the tech fee, and the increase to the pre-sub fee.
The point we wanted to make on that one is that the cost per lot, when we calculated that out, was approximately $34.90. One of the requests that we had from the stakeholders, we made the presentation on proposed fee increases to the developers advisory forum on two different occasions, April and May, and one of the requests they had was really to look at the combined impact of all of the different fees. So that's one of the things that we're focusing on, and we picked out a standard kind of a residential subdivision to show you what the cumulative effect is. So that's what this one is speaking to. In the building safety division, the majority of our permit fees are actually indexed. They're tied to the International Code Council construction table, so those automatically increase every year in April and October. They increase, and for fiscal year 07-08, the increases range from 6% to 7%. Those fees are not part of the proposal that you're seeing today. Those increases, again, are automatic. The major fee increase that is going to be before you on the 23rd is the civil engineering sheet fee. And just to give you a little bit of background on what that is, that's a combination of building safety, staff time, again, with the goal there of full cost recovery, and then engineering trying to increase their cost recovery rate from a current about 30% up to 65%. We historically had a number of engineering fees for different types of improvements, street work, street lighting, sidewalks. We've combined the fee for one fee for any of those different types of sheets. And we've established one standard fee, which is $710. The current range goes from about $370 to $850. The average right now is about $550. That's where the,
so,
I'm sorry.
If I can understand, so there may be, the current range is $370 to $850, so someone may be paying $370 for a service right now. They're going to be paying $710 as a standard fee. Someone may be paying $850. Now they're going to be paying $710.
Correct. And again, the major increase there is to get us to full cost recovery and the engineering side of it. This is the rate for the standard sheet, oversized sheets, again, for that average are $1,065.
Okay.
The new fee that is being proposed is the technology improvement fee. One of our current problems is that we simply don't have the money within the Building Safety Restricted Fund to increase technology applications. Our Tidemark system, which is the electronic permitting system, was purchased and installed approximately 5 years ago. It's an aged system at this point in time because of the economic downturn and that impact on our bottom line. We simply do not have the funds available to update or replace that Tidemark system. As we all know, technology applications tend to turn over just about every 3 or 4 years. We're going to be behind the curve on that one. The proposal is that we actually have a sub-fund within the Building Safety Restricted Fund that could be used for nothing other than technology enhancements. The way we've actually got it set up is that the expenditure of those funds would actually have to come from the city manager's office, that it couldn't be used for anything other than technology. We looked at a number of different options on how we could effectively get to a point where we could replace Tidemark. That's going to be our primary goal. What we came up with was a 4% fee on top of all planning applications and permit fees in building safety with a maximum cap of $400. The example that you got in your packet, if your permit fee was $1,000, the technology fee would be $40. If your permit fee was $10,000 or anything greater than $10,000, all you'd pay would be the $400. So the per application or permit would never be greater than $400. The total estimated revenue stream from that new fee on an annual basis we're estimating to be approximately $345,000. At that, it'll probably take us 3 to 4 years to accumulate enough revenue that we can actually do the upgrade that we're going to need to on Tidemar. What we wanted to do again was to go back to the request that we'd had from our stakeholders to really talk about what the combined impact of all of the fee increases are going to be. What you've got on this slide showing the increase in the planning fees is $35. Again, going back to this sample residential project where we've got a 60-acre parcel with 103 lots. The civil engineering portion would go up approximately $132, and then the building safety permit fees increase to approximately $108 for a total of just under $300 increase, again, for that sample residential project. We thought it was important to provide a cost comparison for the other cities. Our goal as far as permit and application fees in Mesa has always been to try to stay right about at that median level so that we're not too far above our competitors in the other cities. And this just gives you a snapshot showing that even with the increases in the proposed fees, Mesa is still going to be, again, pretty much right in the middle between Tempe, Gilbert, Queen Creek, and Phoenix.
Christine, we're only comparing our proposed fee with the current fees for these other cities. We're not aware at which they may be increased. We don't know, but this is, we're doing something proposed versus what their current fee is today.
That's correct. Wanted to give you a little bit of an understanding of what the impact of, again, the residential fee increases are going to be, because as I've said, that's been the majority of the discussion with our stakeholders. The planning fee revenue we're estimating to be approximately $15,000 for fiscal year 08-09, approximately $146,000 for building safety. If we don't implement the fee increases, the impact that we're going to be looking at, reduced service levels, which would effectively translate to reduced staff that would be available, a decreased level of cost recovery, particularly in the planning area. Again, in building safety, we really don't have any options. We don't have any funding from the general fund. And bottom line is we'd need to implement greater increases in the future.
Councilmember Summers.
Looking at the report on page 4, it said the fiscal impact of this is $15,600 annually. How is that going to be a reduced service? That's not a lot of money. Or is this the information wrong? Am I interpreting it wrong?
John, did you want to talk to that one?
Mayor, Councilmember Summers, $15,000 is not a whole lot in the scheme of things for planning. In the last slide, it was, I think, the $140,000 for building safety was probably a bigger impact. But certainly any reduction in revenue coming in affects that bottom line and our ability to get the cost recovery that we are shooting for, and will affect then the funding we have for various services that we provide.
So the service impact more toward the building safety than it is for your department?
Again, on the scenario that we're looking at currently, that would be correct. The $150,000 reduction there would be more significant.
Okay. Yeah, that $146,000 didn't make it into the council report, at least the one I have. At least,
or did I miss it?
It's there somewhere. You
might have read it somewhere. Mayor, Councilmember Summers, you've got
it made
the report.
It on slides, but not on the stuff
you've
I read
got
last
report.
Night.
You've got
I was really
report
bored.
Building safety report.
Okay.
Councilmember Kavanaugh.
More just a comment. I do support the residents, the increase in the fees here. I do have a concern, with the concept of fees on fees, specifically the technology fee. It seems as if we might be moving down the road that airlines are doing in terms of fees for everything. And I think we have to be cautious about the issue of fee fatigue among our users. I mean, the actual amount of the technology fee is not necessarily a large fee, but so too are the fees for checking bags or buying soft drinks and things like that. It adds an irritation factor to customers and patrons. And I don't think this is a concept that I hope we would widely adopt. If we have a fee for a service, let's have a fee. But fees on fees, I think, is an approach that is something that can generate customer resistance, and and concern. So it's just, I'm going to support the proposal, but I just have a concern with that concept. Thank you, Mayor.
Any other comments or questions?
Mayor, can I just quickly, and Councilman Kavanaugh brings up a great point. Our perspective was trying to actually create a source that we could show the industry how we're reinvesting it. But your point is sensitivity we need to be concerned about too. Really, we thought we were trying to do a way to be able to show people where the funds were actually going to improve the service, but we'll be very sensitive to that in the future. Thank you.
If I could just add one comment to that. We've had a lot of discussion through the Development Advisory Forum, particularly the last two meetings in April and May, and we had a lot of discussion, particularly on that issue. And I was honest with them that my goal here is to make sure that we're able to fund those technology improvements in the future, and it, certainly there was a lot of discussion going directly to your point.
Councilmember Higgins?
Mayor, I just have one question for you. On the April 21st report, you said that you would bring in an additional $191,000. And then in today's overview, it's like $161,500. There's like $30,000. I just wondered.
Right. Mayor, Councilmember Higgins, when we did the original projection for planning where we did not opt out the single residence, that was our projection was $191,000 for planning. But then it was reduced when council did not approve for the single residence applications. We bracked that $15,000 out.
So, John, the other included what? It included it, commercial.
It's all of our commercial.
So everything we've just separated the residential component, single family residential only. That's all you're seeing now.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other comments or questions? I have a I appreciate you're trying to balance the realities of money with the demands of service. And there's one thing though that there's a few contradictions in that balancing effort that I'd like to bring up. Ms. Lunke said something real interesting, which was service levels are driven by the revenue we bring in. And I think that's the reality you're dealing with. I'm not so sure if in the long run, and I know that from certainly this chair, you're gonna be hearing something a little different, because at the end of the day, we are in a service business. The city exists to provide services to its people, and I understand, and I'm trying to be very careful what I say, because this is a long-term conversation. I understand and I support the concept of cost recovery. I think in many instances it is absolutely essential and necessary. I get a little concerned when we are driven more to cost recovery than we are to service. And I believe that's a mindset more than a dollars and cents kind of a thing. I've found that certainly in the development business, that developers are willing to pay for when they believe they're getting services and we can provide services. Not all, but most good developers, the kind of quality developers that we want in this community. I also, as we go forward and the economic development that we strive for and that we really need, you're at the forefront. I mean, you're the gateway. And I would really like to, as we move forward, have discussions as to how we can truly create the kind of service perception. And that's both what we're actually providing, but mostly what our customers think we're providing. Because I'm too concerned with what Councilmember Kavanaugh brought up, that although our actual levels of services may be a certain thing, if the perception may be out there that somehow we're not meeting their needs. And that does keep people from coming into our community investing, which is as what we've seen. We need that. We want that. And we want to do whatever we can to accomplish that. It seems a little conflicting that as the economy has dampened the activity in development and in building, that we are going the opposite direction in order to recover costs from a dwindling level of activity by raising fees on those who are willing to invest in a time when not everyone's willing to invest. And that's a contradiction that bothers me and that I know is a challenge for you. And I'd like to maybe have some ongoing discussions as to how we truly take a more service-oriented approach and how we look at it that way, and once again, rely on our stakeholders and those who are willing to invest to assist us in this without the perception that somehow we're just merely trying to recover costs we're forcing them to get a permit and then having them pay for the privilege of coming in to get a permit, which we're forcing them to get, which is a big perception. And to me, that goes to being a business-friendly, which I hate that term, but it's out there, a business-friendly environment. And so.
And Mayor, it's a great point, and I think the statement there overemphasizes that service levels are driven by revenues. I think what we're trying to capture is that we rely upon the revenues to staff. But certainly, and we'd be glad to bring back to council on a regular basis, there is a tracking of performance of both efficiency and effectiveness. And I think we also need to step up on how well we're doing, how our customers perceive that service too. So there is a balance. I mean, we can drive better service by being more efficient and more effective in what we do. And that's something we can continue to measure.
Yeah, and I'm confident. I've worked with you and your staff, and you know, there's great people out there. You have wonderful staff who are operating under very challenging conditions. And you know, so I'm not thinking this is an easy fix or it's something we just snap our fingers and it changes. But I'd like to have this ongoing discussion about how we truly create that, which I think was a win-win for everybody. It won't be easy, but I think it's something we need to get to if we're going to achieve the kind of long-term development and provide you with the kind of resources that you truly need to be able to provide that level of service. So, you know, I'm speaking up here, and I know that the devil is surely in the details, but it's just something I'd like to throw out that I'd like to have those ongoing discussions and offer certainly my support to providing whatever a situation or resources or condition that we can.
I know that's an ongoing discussion, but could I respond just real quickly to
it? Go for it, yeah.
Customer service is absolutely our most important issue. And although we've certainly been faced with some challenges relative to the reduction in staff, my primary goal personally as the department head was to look at that customer service piece of it. One of the first things that we did when we were looking at the huge reductions in building safety, we actually got together with our stakeholders. We had a special meeting. We called it within about 3 days, and we sat down with them and asked them, what are your major issues? What are the major service areas? What are the major headaches that we provide you, and how can we streamline our services? So that's been a major goal of ours, to take this opportunity, quite frankly, look at how we can become more efficient, how we can do a better job, and absolutely keep our stakeholders involved to make sure that we're hearing them and making sure that we're providing the level of service that they want, not what we think they ought to be having.
And I appreciate that. And I, like I said, I have... you have some great people working for you, and I've had the opportunity to work with them, and I know that's challenging, and I appreciate your attention. I know you're committed to doing that, so it'll be we'll have follow-up discussions, and I appreciate
great.
That. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank
I
you.
Guess we'll add this on the agenda. We'll act on it on the.
It'll be on the June 23rd agenda.
Okay. Next item on the agenda is to hear reports on meetings and/or conferences attended. Councilmember Summers.
One report last night went to. DMB had an open house at Desert Ridge High School to review their plans and show how they plan to create something pretty special over at the Mesa Proving Grounds. A lot of displays and free cookies, which I brought home to the kids. And if you want a free cookie, for those who were not able to attend yesterday, there is another one at Desert Ridge High School Saturday morning, 8:30 to 10:30 a.m. So I encourage anybody who's interested in what's going on in the Gateway region to go get a free cookie and check out the display for DMB.
Thank you. Vice Mayor?
Yes, last Friday and Saturday, I had my National League of Cities Public Safety and Crime Prevention Steering Committee meeting, which happened to be in Scottsdale this time, which made it a lot more convenient. And we had Chief Gascon was one of our featured speakers and did a very excellent job talking about Fusion Center and cooperation between agencies in a very successful meeting.
Thank you. Any other reports? Schedule of meetings and general information. Mr. Brady.
Thank you, Mayor. Reminder, we do have another study session next Thursday at 7:30 a.m. And then we have the following Thursday, June 26th, is the day we have scheduled the joint meeting with Planning and Zoning and the City Council. Will allow the Council to begin the meeting at 7:30 a.m., and I think we've invited the Planning and Zoning Commission to join us at 8, so we can get, if there's any business of the Council, we can have that completed in time. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Crocker, do we have any requests to speak from citizens?
No requests, Mayor.
There being none, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
Move for adjournment, second.
Move, second. All in favor? Aye. Motion carries. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.